Welcome to the April 26, 2011 Morro Bay City Council meeting. Let the record reflect that all council members are present, and we'd like to begin, please, with a moment of silence. And if you would please rise and face the flag, we'll be led in the Pledge of Allegiance by Mr. Craig Schmid.
Please join me in a salute to our flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Good job, Craig. Announcements. I'll start with Noah.
Quick little bit of housekeeping. Nancy, were you going to announce the Teen Center workshop?
I'll let you do that.
Okay. Well, this Thursday, we have a special Recreation and Parks Commission meeting focused on our Morro Bay Teen Center, which is out front of the Morro Bay High School. And this meeting is a follow-up to the workshops that were hosted at the Teen Center approximately a month and a half ago. And there will be a review of the results from the participants in those workshops, and then actual dialogue and a workshop format to explore some of the options for what the new Teen Center plan could contain as far as the facilities and the elements of that plan. So the focus is there's some grant money available, and we're going to apply, and so let's update the Teen Center master plan and have it ready for part of that grant application. So once again, this Thursday at the Morro Bay Recreation and Parks Commission meeting here at the Morro Bay Vets Hall, it's April 28th, 5:30 p.m., and the workshop will pretty much last probably about 2 hours. So if you could show up at any point during that, your participation would be appreciated. And following that, the recommendations from the Rec and Parks Commission will then come to our council for further discussion. So that is one of my announcements. Another announcement I have is, just was reading this morning the San Francisco Chronicle about the PG&E smart meter update, basically. And what PG&E has done is, as they wait for the California Public Utilities Commission to have their hearing on the smart meter issue, they are allowing people to call in and postpone, essentially, any installation of a smart meter if you do not have one. And they have a hotline number that you can call if you would like to do this. As you may know, Morro Bay, we've sent a letter requesting to cease installations until the California Public Utilities Commission makes their recommendations and ruling. But at this point, it might be a safe bet if you are concerned about the smart meters to call PG&E, and the number is 877-743-7378. Once again, that's 877-743-7378.
Joy.
Thank you. Carla?
Excuse me. Good evening. Thank you. Lots of meetings and activities coming up that I just want to share some times and dates. Thursday the 27th this week at 5:30 is Eco Rotary meeting, and they are meeting at the Flying Dutchman. Next Wednesday, for anyone interested, which is the 4th, the Estero Bay Youth Coalition will be meeting at 7:30 a.m., very early, at Del Mar School. Next Thursday, the 5th, is the Harbor Advisory Board meeting at 7 o'clock. Next Friday is Special Olympics at Cuesta College, for those of you who can make it out there. And then the first weekend in May, the 7th and 8th, is our car show, cruising Morro Bay. And on that Sunday is the dog show up at the city park. So there's a lot of activities coming up. And I just want to remind anyone who's interested in purchasing a ticket for drawing to win wine down at Stacks. The benefits, the proceeds benefit the 4th of July, and they're on sale. I think they're drawing on the 1st, so only a few more days left.
Thank you. I want to welcome everybody. I always try to greet everybody, but I see I've missed Bill and Tracy and Brian and Rob and others that have came in after we started. So we welcome everybody. We really appreciate you coming out and being here. We had no closed session report tonight. I also wanted to thank Nancy and Gary, went to Washington, D.C. last week on vacation and took their own time out of their vacation to visit our representatives in Congress and the Senate. and thank you for doing that. We appreciate it. So we are at the public comment period. The highlight of the evening comes right up front. Any of you would like to address council, this is the appropriate time. I'm going to ask Craig to come first and Kathy Weaver to come second. After that, it's as you choose to come up, please keep your comments to 3 minutes. At 3 minutes, the buzzer goes off, and we'd ask that you conclude your comments at that time. Good evening, Craig, and welcome.
Good evening. Thank you. Craig Schmidt, the Morro Bay Chamber of Commerce. I thought I'd start off with something fun. I know after tonight, everybody is going to want to go out and fly a kite. And this Saturday and Sunday, we've got Kite Festival going on. As Nancy said, the parade starts at Bank of America at 10 o'clock. Put on your suffragette dress. Bill, I know you've got several. Yeah, three of them. And come join the parade. After the parade at 11:30 at the Rock, the Salinan Tribe will be doing the Blessing of the Wind. And then we'll be flying kites. And if the wind's anything like it is today, we'll be flying a lot of kites. So come please join us Sunday. It's a two-day event also at 11:30, so hope to see all of you there. And also want to say thank you for your recognition of May as National Tourism Month. Tourism brings in $70 million into our local economy, and it is a very important sector of our economy. So thank you for that recognition.
Thank you, Craig. Kathy Weaver may go next, please. Kathy's opened a new business on the waterfront, and she's here to introduce it. And welcome.
Hi. I've opened Undercover. It's a lingerie shop. It's at the Boatyard, 845 Embarcadero.
Can you speak right into the mic?
Sure. It's across from Coffee Cottage around the corner from the Chamber. And we do specialty orders. If the ladies need something special, I can order it, special sizes. I have different kinds of pajamas and some men's items there, some hats, some socks, some ties. So some Allure items, the colognes and perfumes and that sort of thing. So I'm hoping it goes real well, and so far it has. It's a great little shop, and we have great prices, too. So I hope that everybody comes and sees me. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathy. Thanks for coming down. Best of luck. George and I have been in. We love lingerie stores.
Kathy also. we love the store, and Kathy is also would be a great babysitter. She loves my grandson.
I know I will appreciate that store. I think that's something that we've needed here for a long time. Good evening, Mayor Yates, City Council members. My name is Andrea Klipfel. I'm with Edward Jones. I am here speaking tonight on behalf of Relay for Life. The American Cancer Society Relay for Life unites communities across the country each year to celebrate the lives of those who have battled cancer, remember loved ones lost, and fight back against a disease that takes too much. Our Relay for Life is coming up on August 6th and 7th. It's going to be at the Morro Bay High School football field. Everyone in this room probably knows someone that has been affected by cancer. ACS provides critical services here in Morro Bay to help these people every day through programs that provide wigs and makeup to women during chemotherapy, rides to and from the doctor appointments they might need, and support groups for men going through prostate cancer and much more. If you'd like to get involved locally, our next information and team captain meeting is coming up on May 10th at 6 o'clock. And that's going to be at the Embarcadero Grill upstairs.
Speaking of the Kite Festival, you've got a great opportunity to have two fantastic professionals, that will be Bill Shushuk and myself, that will show you how to take fantastic pictures of kites. I know I have some award-winning pictures that I've taken out there and won first place. We're going to have a booth set up by the Chamber of Commerce, so we will be there 2 days. Come in there. We'll show you how to shoot a good picture. Thank you.
Thanks, Gary.
By the way, we did have a good time in D.C. And Councilwoman Johnson, I think she spent a third of her time seeing the senators and all that, trying to get money for our city. Don't know how well it's going to go with all the cutbacks, but my grandkids were there. They're learning how, I have one here tonight, learning the mechanism how government works. Thank you.
Thanks, Gary. Who'd like to go next? Stan Trapp, good evening.
I'd like to speak about the sign ordinance issue that's coming up tonight. The A-frames or sandwich board signs are a simple way for businesses to get its name out in the public eye. Unfortunately, they've proliferated to the point they're virtually useless and become really sign pollution. I commend council not only for trying to eliminate this eyesore, but for recognizing the need for that the signage still exists, and seeking out a more attractive alternative in pub signs. They're perhaps a little more expensive, but they look so much more appealing, and I believe they're truly more effective. So I commend the council for addressing this issue.
Thank you, Stan. Good evening, Bill. Welcome.
Thank you. Name's Bill Suchak. I own a business along the Embarcadero. I, too, am here to discuss the sign ordinance. I'll give you two circumstances or issues as a bit of a concern for me. Number one, driving up and down the Embarcadero, I counted today 39 A-frames. North Morro Bay, I counted another 22. So that does tell you something, that businesses are trying their best in this economy to try and drag customers into their businesses. Yes, I do agree that A-frames may not be the perfect scenario or the perfect avenue to address that, but I do believe that there is no other way to do it correctly today. If a ban comes through, I do believe, again, that the city has taken a short-sighted view. There should be some plan to say your A-frame has to be X, your A-frame has to be designed in this way, and it has to be upkept. Now, do we want a volunteer, somebody to police the A-frames and their condition? I don't know, but that's something that is of a concern. Now, in my instance of my A-frames, I change the face of the A-frame twice a year because the A-frame does deplete in quality over a six-month cycle. So I'm one of the few that do that. If you walk around the Embarcadero, you will see I counted seven A-frames that are in pieces. That is the problem, and I think that is the partial concern. Now, I want to talk about, as a personal experience, from the way that I started my business along the Embarcadero almost 5 years ago, I was upstairs. Being on an upper deck store, there is no other alternative to drag customers into that business. I did use two A-frames. I graduated and went down to the main floor, but I was in the back. I still needed my A-frames to drag my customers into the store. So when you think about all the businesses just along the Embarcadero that are in need of foot traffic to the rear, that was 38 stores that I counted today. In my version, now maybe somebody else's version, but it's 38 stores today. How are we going to make sure those businesses get customers? So you can't just make a blanket no. There has to be some path to make sure a graduated cycle, maybe over 3 months, 6 months, 12 months, to deplete the A-frame. Just can't say in 30, no more. Now, my experience of getting a permit for an A-frame is another story. I did exactly what I was told to do, which was photograph the area that my A-frame was to be placed. I measured street signage from the A-frame to the curb, did everything. I went in, I paid my $40. Did I get my permit? No. I was told by city staff that it was not worth their time to get me the permit. So we have an issue there. So you're trying to say no for the A-frames, yes for the A-frames. If you're going to do yes, tell me exactly what to do and how to do it. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. Who'd like to go next? Good evening. Welcome.
Good evening. I'm Bill Martini, Morro Bay. And I wanted to talk or ask a few questions as far as 10-acre, to get in touch with them, to give it to them, and they just never responded. This is actually inside the city limits. It's zone R1. It's the equivalent of the property you're selling, the old fire station property. It's an acre of it for over $1 million. This is over 10 acres of the same zoning. So, I mean, you're talking potentially a $10 to $12 million piece of property is offered for nothing. Getting back to square one, if the city does have to purchase it now, and there's still a possibility you could talk to someone in the government and maybe work around that. And if there's an interest, it could potentially be an ideal spot for your wastewater treatment plant or redevelopment for housing or any number of things. It's already level. It's sitting next to the Chevron property at the end of Yerba Buena. It's only maybe a quarter mile from the main sewer trunk line, surrounded two-thirds by trees. So, I mean, it just, no matter what it's used for, it just seems like a valuable piece of property and that someone should possibly check it out. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. Who would like to go next? Hi.
Good evening, Mary Yates, members of the council. My name is Gayska Velasquez, and I'm coming... coming to you from the San Luis Obispo Council of Governments tonight, or SLOCOG, and specifically from the SLO Regional Rideshare Department tonight to thank you for including the proclamation in the consent agenda tonight for Bike Month, May 2011, and also Bike to School Week, May 16th through the 20th. Bike Month is a very exciting time for us. It is a county-wide as well as national-wide event or celebration, and is a celebration of human-powered vehicle transportation, encouraging people of all ages and abilities to ride bicycles instead of driving. So why a Bike Month? Well, the goals are to improve air quality and health, reduce traffic congestion, increase awareness and use of bicycle infrastructure, create a model for youth, and work towards creating sustainable change. Here in San Luis Obispo County, there are a ton of events going on. First and foremost is our fifth annual online commuter challenge. And this year we're going again with an organization challenge. So any organization, if it's your workplace, your church, your community involvement, any organization can challenge another. And to win, you have to have the highest percentage of people from your organization on a bike at some point in the month of May. There's also Bike to Work Bike to Work and School Week, again, May 16th to the 20th. And you can receive free coffee at the Morro Bay Coffee Company and other coffee shops across the county just for bringing your helmet in. There's also the Executive Challenge, and I hope all of you find your Executive Challenge sheet in front of you. And specifically, this is we're asking our leaders in San Luis Obispo County to take part in this event for Bike Month. And specifically on May 18th, Wednesday, May 18th, which is National Bike to Work or School Day. There's going to be four rides throughout the county. Our leaders are going to be riding in and meeting in San Luis Obispo for a bike breakfast. So here for the Make the Coast ride, it leaves Morro Bay Coffee Company at 6:30 a.m. on May 18th. And there's many more events throughout the county. There's confidence workshops. The Slow Bicycle Coalition is doing stuff all month. Kittical Mass in San Luis Obispo, bike breakfast, Cal Poly Bike Fest, a bike-in movie, and then we also have some events locally with our schools here in town, and also, well, I'll speak for it. My daughter attends the Coastal Montessori School at the old elementary, the old Morro Elementary site. They're going to be doing a bike to school day on May 18th with a bike breakfast, and also on May 21st there's going to be a community-wide family-friendly bike fair and bike-a-thon. There's stuff for the kids, stuff for the grown-ups, and we really want to see families out there doing a fitness activity, specifically on bikes. We encourage everyone to ride there with their little ones. There's a list of events in the New Times. You can find a section on the New Times or visit www.rideshare.org for more events and pictures and to see who you're competing with for the challenge. So thanks again for the proclamation. I can take any signed executive challenges. Noah, is yours then? All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And following her up is...
Amy Burton. Thank you, Mayor and City Council members, for allowing me to speak tonight. My name is Amy Burton, and I reside here in Morro Bay on 155 Santa Street. I'm going to tag on to what Gayska just spoke about. Thanks to a mini-grant sponsored by Rideshare, Del Mar Elementary will be celebrating Bike Week for the first time, May 2nd through the 6th. We'll be encouraging students to use pedal power to get to school by offering daily incentives and raffle prizes. We will also have a special raffle on Friday, May the 6th, in which all students will be eligible to enter. The winner of that raffle will lead our Morro Bay 4th of July bike
by itself. But for a city that is so cash-strapped, you can barely afford basic services,
especially extracurricular youth activities within the community, to tell a community volunteer that you have to make a decision between two community services for a conflict you created, well, that is irresponsible and embarrassing. I can understand why people are so upset. Morro Bay should be looking to encourage volunteers, not stifling them. I could continue to play petty politics and continue to show up late for meetings and force you to apply your new rule, your new retroactive rules. I could continue this drama, and many community members have asked me to do this. However, I don't think it is fair to anyone, especially the community, which is currently faced with some very complex and expensive projects. You should be dealing with these issues instead of letting egos and attitudes dominate your priorities. For example, I was shocked that Councilwoman Nancy Johnson, after chastising me Tuesday night for possibly missing meetings and possibly not being present to vote, actually proceeded to miss a JPA meeting the very next night. She was actually absent for votes on issues that directly affect this community, that directly affect our pocketbooks, and will impact numerous generations to come. If it isn't already, the wastewater treatment plant project is going to become a nightmare for this community if we continue with our status quo behavior, direction, and leadership. I think it's wonderful you went to D.C. and were able to mix business with pleasure, but your meetings are scheduled well in advance, and if you honestly cared about absences...
Respectfully, if you wouldn't personalize your statements, say anything you want, but you're kind of getting on one member here, and I would ask you...
Two weeks ago, it was very personal against me, so I would
ask
that I have a chance to counter, and I'm getting to the punchline, so just hold on. My commitment and dedication to this community is obvious. With that said, I hope everyone understands I made a prior obligation to be available for 14 children on Wednesday nights. I took responsibility to be their mentor and have spent the entire season emphasizing to these children that commitments that they have made to themselves and each other as a team are important, and they need to attend all of our practices and games. Abandoning these children mid-game in order to attend the new Planning Commission meeting date will be modeling that commitments are meaningless and easily broken. I'm not willing to be this type of role model for our younger generation of community members. Therefore, I'm resigning, effectively immediately, as Morro Bay Planning Commissioner. I want to thank staff for being professional, prepared, and informative on such a shoestring budget. The changes I've seen the last few years, Rob, have been impressive and positive, and I hope you continue down that path. I want to thank the current Planning Commissioners for recognizing not only the time change of the meeting, but also the value of community service and improving my absences. I have the utmost respect for each of you and apologize for any collateral damage you may have experienced as these events played out. This issue is clearly not about you, and I ask that members of the community please keep this in mind. I stand by all the decisions I made as a planning commissioner because I've always based my decisions after weighing the benefits and consequences of a project for the property owner, community, and future generations. I wish my replacement well and sincerely hope they will find the same balance in their decisions.
Thank you, John, and best of luck to you. And thank you for your service. Good evening, Barry.
Good evening, Mayor Yates and City Council. I met with the mayor this week, and we had a little conversation. And, excuse me, Barry Brannon, Morro Bay. Thank you. So my commitment was to the mayor was to try to do something positive, and I want to tell you, all of you, that I know how hard you work, and tremendous amount is just overwhelming. I can't believe you could keep up with it. But my point is tonight we're coming to an opportunity where we're going to be reviewing the JPA, and the City Council will be reviewing the request from the Coastal Commission on a wastewater treatment plant. And as part of that program, I think it's important when these two workshops come up available that we have citizen input. And it's hard to gather people's ideas, and you talk and you meet each other. So we've put a very simple website up. It's www.cwwmorrobay.info. If you go to that website, there's a place to put comments, and we'll be posting the EIR that we're kind of based the commitment for the wastewater treatment plant on. And as this process develops over the next 2 or 3 months, when the workshops come up, we hope to have citizen information and input that's legible and not waste everybody's time so that we can provide, I think, some little better lubrication between some of the people on one side and the other. We all talk over each other. Maybe we're all talking about the same thing. And hopefully this will provide a little place for people to go, get the information, put their comments in, and also notify anybody that wants to know about the meeting. Sometimes we don't know about the JPA is going to have a meeting on this night or that night. So we offer all the citizens and everyone else that's interested, I hope you go to it, and hope that we can make this this process a little faster and a little easier. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary, and thanks for your positiveness. Hi.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the City Council. I'm Liz Bednors from the Beach House Bistro. And I just wanted to mention that, talk to you briefly about the needs of North Morro Bay in terms of our A-frame signs. Those signs are pretty fundamental for us, especially in North Morro
Bay. I didn't mean to be disrespectful in any way. I hope that wasn't taken that way. Hi.
See, I'm worried.
I'm digging a deeper hole for myself, I think, here. Hi, how are you? Welcome.
Hello, my name is Christopher Rocci. I'm from Merced. I'm visiting my grandma and grandpa. And a couple days ago, I was walking. We were walking back home. We had just walked across the Embarcadero. And I saw the little fold-out signs. They just kind of looked ugly. So what I suggest you do is for places like the Marina Square with highly populated stores is stick like a plank of wood that's like 7-8 feet tall and then put like little pub signs stating all of the places there. And for places like out at the bistro by the bay or whatever, places that are alone, just put like a little pub sign and then like a little chalkboard stating your daily specials. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you, Christopher. Thanks for coming down. Please. Who'd like to go next?
Hi, good evening.
Hi.
I'm Laura.
Can you do the mic right to your...
Sorry.
There you go.
I'm sorry. I'm Laura with Harbor Floral in North Morro Bay, and I'm here because of the sign issue.
Do you need your last name, Bridget? Or do you need
it? Oh, I'm sorry. Laura Rapsinski.
Great. Thanks.
Thank you. 2760 Main Street. So, but anyhow, my shop is set back from the road, and being North Morro Bay, I'm trying to survive. And so the sandwich board really helps. With business for people to be able to see me. So I'm hoping maybe there might be a solution that might work. It's also inexpensive, and I can change the sign a lot for holidays and such, and it really works well. So maybe you can think about it.
Thank you, Laura.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming down tonight. Hi.
Hello, good evening. I'm Alan Rakoff, Lifestyle Adventure, and I do bay cruises in Morro Bay, and sandwich boards are important to me. I've done a count. Out of 10 people, 7 people found me by my board out there. So that's real important. And I'm sure there's other ways on those boards to mandate them on the sidewalks. Maybe every linear feet you can have a board, or, you know, where they're all together. Just like she was saying, you can have a big board, have some names on there. I know there's other ways to do it besides just getting rid of them. So. It's real important, I know, for me to find me down there on the floating dock. You need to have a board up there. So, thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Thanks for coming down tonight. Who'd like to go next? Step right up. Ken, come on up.
Good evening, Council. Ken Vesterfeld, resident of Morro Bay. A couple items. If somebody already hasn't spoken on it, the first annual emergency vehicle show was a major hit for us. We thought we would be happy with 25 to 30 display vehicles, and we had over 80 from all over this state. And so hopefully they will all be back next year and plus many more. Again, it was just a wonderful event, nonprofit organization, thanks to Morro Bay Police Department, Morro Bay Fire Department, and the City of Morro Bay. It was a wonderful event. And next weekend is the Cruise to Morro Bay Car Show, 15th year for that. 500 cars will be here, or vehicles, I should say. And so it's another wonderful event for the city. And hopefully the weather will be there for us, and hopefully we'll all see you down there. So we appreciate that again. So again, May 5th through the 8th for the Vehicle Car Show. Thursday night registration, Friday registration with the crews, 6 to 8 on Friday night, and 9 to 4 on Saturday for the show and shine, and then from 9 to 11:30 with the award ceremony at 11:30 on Sunday. Mother's Day did not affect anybody from coming at all, and so it's going to be a wonderful event for the restaurants and the motel, so we appreciate it. A-frame signs, they're a blight on the city. I think you should consider them. I know some of the businesses, because of where they're located, but it has gotten way out of hand with this stuff. As you know, if you walk down the Embarcadero, sometimes it's a zigzag course. I wish there was another way. Well, there are many other ways of advertising your business, but I'd like to see you put an end to it. The medical marijuana, I hope you all have done your homework. John at the pharmacy wasn't able to be here. One of his concerns is there's no regulation on who...
For Verge's Landing, ours is on the corner directing people to our new location, and right now I don't know what we'd do without it, because we've moved to where we don't have like drive-by traffic. And people looking for our business, when they leave the Embarcadero and come up Beach Street, we have our sign pointing down Market Street right now, and I don't know where that falls into the new restrictions and laws, but gosh, we sure need it. Thank you.
Thanks, Tracy. Who'd like to go next? Step right up. I can't believe it's over. Going once. Going twice. Oh, here we go. Hi, Susan.
Hi, Susan Stewart. I own Beads by the Bay on Morro Bay Boulevard. I'm on your City Promotions Committee. I'm on your Merchants Association Board and your Chamber Board, and have a lot of input from businesses all over town. And I think business owners are really concerned about being able to promote their businesses and let people know they're there. If there's a problem with too many signs, I think we need to deal with that. We need to look at the width of sidewalks. You know, do you have an 8-foot sidewalk or a 4-foot sidewalk? Obviously, if it's 4 feet, you can't put up a sign. But I think it's important to give businesses some alternatives. Instead of just saying, we're taking it all away, give them something tangible that they can replace it with. And I think we've had some good ideas. I know Craig brought up some at a previous meeting. With the poles and the little sort of MASH unit directional signs. Something, though, you can't just take away a business's ability to direct traffic to them and not replace it with something. The other thing I want to say is we had some issues with our private driveway on Main Street that goes behind all of our businesses on Morro Bay Boulevard, with people parking in front of it, and we had to call the police out a few times, and they were very good with helping us out with that. And I was in Andrea's office, and Joe walked in, and I'd also done what any citizen can do, which is to go to the Parks and Recreation website, fill out a form with what your concerns are with something that's not quite right. We needed our curbs repainted red. They'd had a red sign. It was so faded nobody could see it. And I think it was not even maybe 2 days, Joe, and that got painted. And thank you very much. And just to let people know, don't complain. You know, do something. And then be sure to write a thank you, too. All right? Thank you.
Thank you, Susan. Please. I'm sorry if you're new here. We discourage applause, because once we get down the road of applause, then it kind of allows boos, and we really don't like boos here, so we just don't. Anybody else? I'll do it again. Going once, going twice. Thank you all. Thank you, Craig and Kathy, for coming and introducing your business, and Andrea, Gary, and Stan Trapp, Bill Martoni. I'll come back to you. The girls from SLOCOG, Amy Burton, John Diodati, we wish John the best. Barry Brannon, Liz from the Beach House Bistro, Christopher, Laura, Allen, Ken Vestfeld, Tracy there, and Susan at the end. We appreciate all your input. It's very important to us. Bill Martoni, are you still here? We'll get this answered. Do you want to answer it? Go ahead. How's that for fast?
Sure. You can Google federal property Morro Bay to get all the answers that Mr. Martini was asking. The property is located at 3300 Panorama Drive. It's 10 acres with 94 miles of pipeline easement. It was once a naval fuel storage site that transported jet fuel to Lemoore. Staff looked at it very extensively, did preliminary reports, brought a few of those reports to open session to discuss the property and in closed session. We had contact with the federal government on the property and researched it. There were a number of issues that we were concerned on. One was is you couldn't separate the 10 acres from the 94-mile pipeline. You had to take both. There was liability issues and environmental issues with the pipeline that we were concerned about. The other issue is it was only free if you used it for open space or if you used it for a homeless shelter. Anything else, you had to negotiate a price. If it had a public benefit, you could get it for under the probably the sales price that might go, but it would be for a negotiated price. And also, it still had cleanup issues that we were concerned about, environmental issues. So we didn't pursue it further based on council's direction not to pursue acquiring that. So it was only free under certain circumstances and very limited circumstances and had liability and other issues we were concerned about. But we could look at it again if council so directed us.
Great. Thank you. Regarding the A-frame signs, we will be addressing this after the public hearing, but I know most of you aren't going to stick around for that. We do have in the
regarding the date when the council was having those discussions about the Navy property.
Bill Boucher was still working for us. I would say it was four to six years ago is when it was first 2005-2008 was the period we were looking at it.
George, you have anything? And was the Navy or the government property person responded to?
Yes, and that's available in the file. I specifically remember letters to her and the interest, and it went back and forth, and we brought it in open session, and then we brought it back in closed session also, and the decision was at that time it created too much of liabilities and we didn't have a resource use for it. We didn't believe a homeless shelter would be the best use in that area, in a neighborhood area, and then open space, we couldn't use it. We certainly were not looking for it as a wastewater treatment plant at that time. We were looking at it as maybe a corporate yard or other city facilities, but then it would have to be a negotiated price and couldn't be obtained for free.
So, Mr. Martoni, those are all public documents, you know, and when some person says something, it just doesn't ring right with me. I know we're not perfect in this city, but a big project like that to ignore the federal government, it didn't make sense to me. So I believe that we have, and you're welcome to view those if you like.
And the large discussion is really was the deal breaker is we weren't interested in a 95-mile pipeline that we didn't know what the liability was, and just doing the studies to inspect it was going to be a huge amount of money for a pipeline that we didn't know and was responsible for cleanup down the line.
That pipe goes from here to Lemoore, right? Yeah. Nancy, anything, Carla? Okay, there was no closed session report because we had no closed session. So now we're at the consent calendar. Anybody like to pull any item on the consent? Carla?
Yes, please, A1.
Nancy? George? Can I hear a motion approving items A2, A3, and A4?
So moved.
Second.
Discussion? All in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries 5-0. Carla, A1.
Thank you, Mayor Yates. A1 is the quarterly financial status report for the fiscal year ended March 31st, 2011. I had just a few questions that I believe Ms. Slayton was given the opportunity to look at, and some of them were just questions that kind of struck an interest when looking at transit on page 29. For those of you who might not have looked, it listed the dial-a-ride fare box at $921 for the month. So that kind of raised a red flag and a concern that we need to address in regards to transit and the revenues. And also the question that followed up on that is the fourth trolley that we had in looking at our transit costs, hoping to offset some of it. I'm wondering if we've even sold the other trolley that's excess. I had a question on Harbor.
Can I suggest you just take these one at a time?
Sure.
Ask a question, get answers.
Good. That would work. Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor Yates and Council. As far as the question for the transit, the Morro Bay Transit Flex fixed route that used to be our dial a ride, but is now, you know, a call a ride fixed stop. $921 for the month of March is correct. If you were to look at all of the months this fiscal year, the only month that was double that or close was December. They've been $895, $900, $902, very low. Our ridership has absolutely dropped out from what the former dial-a-ride system was. The second question had to do with the fourth trolley. The fourth trolley is not currently on the market. What's happening is Ms. Burlingame is checking out some various options for being able to sell it, one of them being a trolley a dealer, a specific trolley, you know, what do I want to say, like a
trolley
not
broker.
An auction, but yeah, yeah.
Trolleybroker.com, I think it is. I've been to the site. Okay, so yeah, my concern, I guess, then for future would be that, you know, our dial-a-ride is about, I believe it was approximately $200 a day, $4,000 or $5,000 a month, and we brought in $921. So I see that as a huge concern. On Measure Q, their report in February, they had commented about the money not being spent that was in the budget, and only $156,000 of that year-to-date has been spent of the $900,000. And so my question was,
we do have money that's allocated and will stay allocated to those different areas so that we can get enough money to really do something with it, because it's very expensive to do a street. And, of course, I don't know if there's any storm drain projects that are coming up. Maybe Mr. Livick has something to add to this.
Just want to point out that we have worked with our maintenance division over in Parks and Recreation to just put a project out to bid for improvements at intersections in the north part of town, various intersections in the beach tract. So we should be getting bids back on that within the next couple weeks or so. So I think there was 12 intersections that we're going to be working on, and we should be seeing those Measure Q signs up very shortly in those areas, advertising that we're going to be working on those intersections.
Thank you. I had others, but I'll get with you. So my last question at this time would be under risk management on page 27. The liability insurance is $171,000 over budget.
Yes, it is, and that was an error on our part when we did the budget initially. We did not put in a budget for the earthquake and flood insurance, and that money is being collected by the risk management department. Risk management pays for the insurance and then makes collections from the other departments to cover that. So that there should have been a budget amount in there for the earthquake and flood insurance. We are getting then more revenue than what our budget says, because we didn't conversely put in a revenue line item for the earthquake and flood insurance. So both sides of the budget items were missing.
Okay. Thank you.
You good? Anybody else on this item?
No? I just would like to thank Ms. Slayton for putting this together. It's been helpful to look at, and appreciate the work you put into it.
Carla, would you please make a motion to approve item A1?
Move to approve A1.
Discussion? All in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. We'll take a 10-minute break, and we will come back, and we will start the public hearing on the medical marijuana dispensary. B1, Ms. Luker.
Thank you, and good evening, Council. Item B1 is consideration of an amendment to the Morro Bay Municipal Code, Title 5, adding Chapter 5.50, establishing regulations and procedures entitled Medical Marijuana Collectives and Cooperatives. And I will turn it over to Rob Schultz, our city attorney, for the presentation.
Good
Good evening again. I'll be brief since this matter has been before you on numerous occasions, the last being on March 8, 2011. The council requested that the city attorney return this item to the city council as a draft within 45 days or less. Therefore, this matter is in front of you again for your review and direction. Attached as exhibits is my staff report from March 8th, the last time you heard this item. And that report goes into detail on our background on this item since 2005 up to 2010 and how we got to where we are today with the medical marijuana dispensary that was run by Charles Lynch and its closing down, and then council's expressing the desire in 2010 to enact regulations that would regulate medical marijuana dispensaries in Morro Bay. And also my report of March 8th goes into the inconsistencies between federal law, which prohibits marijuana, the possession and cultivation of it, and the inconsistencies with that and the 1996 California voters approved Proposition 215 and the Compassionate Use Act, and goes into quite a bit of detail on the federal law, state laws, and the differences there. That I won't go into detail with. Attached as Exhibit B are the minutes of your last meeting on March 8th to get you what your questions were, and I tried to attach as exhibit some of your questions, which was, of course, is our revised draft ordinance. I've done some tweaks and changes that were recommended to the ordinance. And then as Exhibit D is the Attorney General's guidelines. There was talk about that. The Attorney General's guidelines are attached for the security and non-diversion of marijuana grown for medical purposes. I do not know when those new Attorney General guidelines will be amended. We do have a new Attorney General since last November, but there isn't any word on when they might come out. Exhibit E is a paper that was done on what the Attorney General guidelines mean for medical cannabis. That was done by Americans for Safe Access, which kind of explains in more layman's term what those guidelines mean. And then as Exhibit F is a white paper on marijuana dispensaries that was done by the California Police Chiefs Association, which talks about the secondary effects and the problems that you have with meeting the guidelines as far as caregivers is concerned and being able to comply with Prop 215. With that, I'll turn it over back to you. I can go into much more detail if you want me to on the differences between the federal and state law, or go into the ordinance if you would like me to, but I think we've been through that a few times, and the subcommittee sure has gone through it.
Thank you, Rob. Well, we'll start with questions before we open it up to the public. Who wants to go first? Go ahead, Noah.
Well, thank you. I have a question, actually, for, I believe, Mr. Lifick. It's regarding placements, and if we were to move forward without with focusing it through the zoning code, if we wanted to be more specific about the siting of a potential dispensary, what sort of work burden would that be, just off the top of your head, and how would you see that process moving forward through the Planning Commission and so on, if that's the way we want to go?
If I'm understanding the question correctly, it's to... right now, the way we're regulating this is any place that drug stores can be medical or marijuana dispensaries could also exist. So it'd be a change in the zoning code to add that land use category and to modify our zoning tables to select the allowable zoning where that could occur. So it would first go to Planning Commission for... discussion, public hearing there, maybe more than once at Planning Commission. I don't know. Couldn't predict that. Then it would come back to City Council for your discussion and direction. We would prepare a draft ordinance, first and second reading of the ordinance. So that would take probably 60 days at minimum to get through draft and first and second reading. And then, since we are in the coastal zone, we need to send that to the Coastal Commission, and I could not predict how long the Coastal Commission would take to act on something of that nature. But I would, based on other projects. I would say, you know, no sooner than probably 6 months after submitted would they act on it.
And as far as the work burden for your departments, how would you see that fitting in with your other priorities?
Well, our first priority is current planning activities, so those projects that are ready to go and ready to be constructed. So those would always take first priority. And if directed by council, we could make this a priority, and we would basically fit this in. Realistically, I think you're looking at about a year to get this through the process if we're looking at a zoning amendment. It's not a simple process in the coastal zone.
Are there any costs associated with that besides staff time?
I don't believe so.
Okay. Thank you.
George? Nancy?
Just to follow up on Noah's questions, could you just give us a general estimate in terms of what the cost would be for staff time if, in fact, we went this route?
Maybe if you could give me a minute, I could use the back of my napkin here to play with some numbers. And if anybody has any questions for Mr. Schultz, maybe I can work on this for a second or two.
Thank you very much.
Carla? And I guess I don't have questions at this time, so we'll go ahead and open it up to the public. And it's just like the public comment period, 3 minutes. Step right up to the microphone, state your first and last name for the record. We'd also like to hear your city of residence. Who'd like to go first? Nobody? Okay, I'm just kidding. Come on.
Good evening, Mayor, City Council. My name is Rich Donald. I've appeared before you before. I'm the chairman of Americans for Safe Access for San Luis Obispo County. For a year and a half, almost 2 years, I've attended every meeting of the subcommittee, and during that time I've reviewed literally hundreds of city ordinances from other cities regarding medical marijuana. In April, the mayor of San Jose suggested that their application process should be to put up slots on eBay and that it should go to the highest bidder. I joined other activists and business owners in opposition to that suggestion, and the ordinance before you, in my opinion, is an exceptional ordinance. It addresses every major concern a local government can have in that it puts all responsibility to justify the safety and legal compliance in the hands of the applicant to be reviewed and either accepted or rejected by you. You have complete control over who would be allowed to open and how that business would be conducted. I believe the City Council should follow the clear wishes of the voters of Morro Bay and allow this ordinance to go forward to the first reading. Thank you.
Thank you. Who would like to go next? Hi.
Hello, Mayor Yates, Council, staff. Thank you for letting me talk. My name is John Stevens. I'm with Go Green Compassionate Care Collective. My wife and I have a vision of a Go Green Cafe. I know y'all have been working on this ordinance, and that we're looking at it a little differently in a more health fashion, a mind, body, and spirit detoxification cafe, if you will. It's a raw organic cafe designed to allow people to detoxify their body or maintain an alkaline body or a detoxified body, if you will. In the meantime, a lunch or a dinner portion, which would normally run $8, $12, $14, we could propose for $250, $350. We could have a, you know, at cost or below cost and have people actually be able to afford to maintain their diet that way, if you will. But it's more about a holistic mind, body, and spirit detox. The medical cannabis comes into play. It is about health. I mean, we have 1,400 members, and I can tell you I know 450 of them personally, and over half of them are seriously, you know, cancer patients, AIDS, whatever have you, and the cannabis does help them. It's something, you know, you have your choice of Vicodins or you have your choice of having a little cannabis to get some sleep or relieve the pain. At any rate, again, I find myself up here a little uncomfortable, obviously. I didn't plan on doing a presentation tonight, but we'd really like to have a cafe that really supports holistic healing. And again, we'd like to have it in Morro Bay, as you seem to be open, or seem to be the only people that are even talking about it in our county at this point. And again, we're not from Morro Bay. We're from Five Cities, but we'd sure like to come to Morro Bay and actually move here if at all possible. But anyway, that's it for me. Thank you for your time and listening, though.
Thank you. Who'd like to be next? Don't be shy. Step right up. Hi.
Hi. My name is Catherine, and I am a medicinal cannabis card holder. And I'm here actually to talk about what I believe to be the benefits of cannabis as opposed to other drugs. I suffer from insomnia and migraine headaches, and I used to jump horses, and I was in an accident where my back was severely messed up. And I was on a number of prescription medications in order to help all of those. And combined with the side effects that they already had and the combination of all of them together, I was often shaky, I couldn't drive, really dizzy, always had some sort of stomach pain or other problem. And when I was offered the opportunity to see if medical cannabis actually worked, I don't suffer from any of that anymore. The pain is completely gone from all my problems. And if there are any side effects, it's that I get really hungry and I have to have a bag of baby carrots or some chips. And that really doesn't seem like a big deal to me in the long run in comparison to what other drugs did to me. Even though it made something better, it just ended up bringing on another problem. I think people that have their cards are really showing you that we want to be able to do this legally, and we want this to be okay in the government, and we don't want to be afraid of using it for the reasons that have obviously proven to be really good for us. The closest place to hear that you can get it as legally as possible is Santa Barbara. There are people here that are called caregivers that can grow for you or can supply you with the needed medicine, but in order to find someone that is for sure 100% legal is actually really hard and not guaranteed, and Santa Barbara is therefore the closest place that you can get from a dispensary. I do now work for the Go Green Care Collective, and I strongly believe that a dispensary should be opened here. No matter how small it starts out, no matter what the restrictions, I think it's just really important to get that started and let the cardholders and other people know that this is something that you're willing to support in a good way. I recently had one of our customers, she suffers from cancer. She just called up and she was crying because the only thing that has helped her through this, she's had it for 10 years, been through chemo for 10 years. She was 17 when it started. And she is so thankful for what we do and so thankful that we push and we try to get this done. So I ask that you also push and try to get this done and think about, you know, it might not help everyone, but it definitely helps a large majority. Thank you.
Thanks. What's your city of residence, please? And your last name? Can you step back up? And what's your last name?
Ford.
Yeah, it's an easy one. We'd like to go next.
Good evening. My name is Lauren Stevens, and I am with Go Green Care Collective as well. And, you know,
and your city of residence, please.
Grover Beach.
Thanks.
I'm here tonight not to speak on behalf so much of Go Green Care Collective or us being chosen to be the dispensary. That's not my intention right now. My intention right now is to do whatever I can to expand people's understanding and the opportunity of service to community and county members that are in need, whether it be, again, to me, it's about provide this service has been an amazing, amazing service to see these people that are trying to get off prescription drugs and that are, their bodies are so ridden with these drugs and trying to do what they can to have a natural remedies. And you know, Go Green Organic Cafe or Go Green Care does provide so many different remedies, whether it be capsules or whether it be pain eraser, inflammatory response creams, incredibly effective products, high quality products. The medicinal cannabis provided is tested. There is no Steve Pills Laboratories. They do testing on medical cannabis. We do not welcome anything within our collective that is not medicinal quality. So these things can be absolutely controlled. Again, this is not really, I speak of Go Green Care because that's it. I just really want to expand people's minds and understanding of the value that people are receiving in all the different remedies that can be provided, and bring light to the raw foods. Cannabis, cancer cannot grow in an alkaline body, and if we can provide raw live foods for people and people can detox their bodies and have an alkaline body, disease cannot grow in an alkaline body. And I just, my heart goes out to so many people in need, and I just thank all of you that are even entertaining this. It's a movement that I'm proud to be a part of, and I just thank the city of Morro Bay for having open minds enough to look at this seriously in a way that can be and is such a benefit to just so many people in need. So I thank you.
Thank you. Who would like to go next? Don't be shy. Here we go. Hi again, Bill.
Good evening again, Bill Martini. I'm not speaking for or against marijuana per se. I would just more had a couple questions, and that is, I understand that the last gentleman, that Mr. Lynch, I think his business did something, and I could be wrong, $2 million a year, something to that effect. If something is this big, I want to know as far as if it does come into town, the selection process, because that is a huge, huge amount of money, which, if you're going to have one or two, I mean, whoever makes a decision like this, I think is highly critical. And it's something that I think really needs to be thought about. The other thing is, I know there was a, you know, the ordinance or resolution that was passed that said to consider, you know, allowing a medical marijuana dispensary in town. And I think Carla mentioned, yeah, it said you had the right to allow one, but it didn't say you had to have one. So I just wanted to kind of reiterate. I may not have paraphrased you exactly, but something to that effect. So it's not saying you absolutely have to have one. And all I'm saying is if you do decide to have one, to kind of take and just consider the location and the person involved, because when you're getting into this type of dollar figures, it's I'm not talking about, it's a very, very big amount of money. And then again, would the local pharmacy or that, I know there's one that opened up on Morro Bay Boulevard, would they be qualified as far as just operating out of that pharmacy and supplying the medical marijuana? Because I know as a pharmacist, they'll probably have that option. And I just didn't know if something like that would be in the ordinance, that existing local businesses that are licensed pharmacies, if they would also be qualified for something like this. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. We'd like to go next. Hi, Roger. Welcome. We'd like to go next. Here we go.
Sorry.
No problem.
If I may, before I start, I just had some information I'd like to present to the City Council.
Give it to the City Attorney.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for your time. My name is Brandon Morris, and I'm actually from the Santa Barbara area. I currently live in Carpinteria, and this was actually quite a long drive for me to get here, so I can imagine how disheartening it could be to a lot of your sick and otherwise terminal patients here in Morro Bay to have to make that trip down to Santa Barbara to be able to acquire their medication. I come here today first to applaud you for actually taking the opportunity to look at this particular issue. It's a very, very important issue that I think does need to be addressed. A couple things that I would like to point out is that firstly, about the amount of money that comes into dispensaries, one thing that is important
if
to realize...
If you could address us here and
sorry,
speak into the microphone.
One of the things that is important to realize is that they are required to be nonprofit organizations, which means that a large amount of their surplus income, not profits, would actually have to go back to the community. So that is something that I may... otherwise, say that you may want to consider what sort of projects that could be benefited by the medical cannabis community. Also, going back to the question on whether or not you may or may not have the ability to allow it, well, that has already been decided in the courts. As a matter of fact, I'd like to go ahead and give you guys the citation very briefly. Qualified Patients Association versus the City of Anaheim actually did address that particular issue. And what they were able to find in the City of Anaheim was that the Attorney General guidelines on page 13, it says, the Attorney General concludes in its guidelines that while dispensaries as such are not recognized under the law, a properly organized and operated collective or cooperative that dispenses medical marijuana through a storefront may be lawful under California law. But dispensaries that do not substantially comply with the guidelines covering collectives and cooperatives are likely operating outside of the provisions of the CUA and the MMPA, which would give you the ability to go in there and shut them down anyways because they're not following state law. But it also addressed the issue of state preemption to a certain degree. One of the things that it said on page 19, it says, at this stage of the proceedings, the city attempt to appeal to torpedo the plaintiff's preemption claims on the grounds that the CUA and the MMPA do not apply to them is premature. It says, on page 20, the only issue before us at the trial court's ruling found on preemptive power of federal law sustaining the city's demur to the complaint without leave. It says the trial court apparently did not consider whether the MMPA's provisions that are distinct from the CUA, including sections 11 through 62.765 and 0.775, preempt the city's ordinance. They hadn't taken that into consideration. And it goes on page 22 that says it appears incongruous at first glance to conclude that a city may criminalize as a misdemeanor a particular use of property that the state expressly has exempted from criminal liability. In sections 11 through 62.765 and 775, put in another way, it seems odd that the legislature would disagree with the federal policymakers about including medical marijuana in penal drug house abatement legislation, but instead intend that local legislators could side with federal instead of state counterparts in prohibiting and criminalizing property sales solely on the basis of medical marijuana activities. After all, being a local entity, you are a product of the state, not the federal government. The Attorney General also addressed the issue of preemption by saying that, in fact, there is no conflict between state and federal law. You have two laws that are in place. You have a oath of the officers of the state of California that are duty-bound to uphold the state law of the state of California, and then you have the same for the federal government. So if the federal government decided to come in and enforce federal law, that's fine. But this being a municipality that is under the constitution of the state of California, which is a sovereign state, you are absolutely required to follow state law. A couple points that I was just wanting to point out very briefly is that there is no provision for the edibles, and that's the information that I gave you. The city of San Francisco has addressed that, and I think that you should take a look at that. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thanks for driving all this way for your input. Sorry we have to cut you off, but that's the rules.
Okay, thank you.
Who'd like to go next? Anybody else? Hi.
Good evening. City Council, Mr. Mayor, City Attorney and Manager's Office, Chief of Police. My name is Rick Morris. I came here from Fresno, California. And just briefly to address the edible issue, there should be some... Hold on. Let me back up a little bit. The ordinance that I've read from the City of Morro Bay is probably one of the best ordinances I've ever read. And I've read just about every one. I used to be with Americans for Safe Access. I was a Pacific Region Specialist. My job was to take the work that Mr. Schultz does and just pick it apart line for line, period for period, comma for comma, and tell him where he messed up. I couldn't do that. He did a good job, very good job. As a matter of fact, I'd like to metaphorically applaud him and the city council for doing such a good job. I'd say it was nearly perfect if it had the provisions in there from the edible guidelines. You don't want somebody from Morro Bay being the first medical marijuana-related death because they died of anaphylactic shock because somebody didn't know food handling. So that's one of the things that I would suggest you put into your provisions would be the edible guidelines. And they're probably the least restrictive out of not having guidelines. Food handling, food service, it should be considered in this because edibles, it's a big part of this business. There are a lot of people that can't smoke it because of bronchitis and other diseases of the lungs. I'm going to set aside the guidelines really quick, and there are a couple of things I'd like to bring to your attention. I'm not sure if I'm coming across this well or not. 2.3 men and 2.6 women in their lifetime will develop cancer, so if you don't know anybody yet, you will, if you don't yourself. The research is coming out on the cancer medications that are being derived from cannabis are spectacular, and you don't want to not be able to have that available to you and the people in your city. There were a couple other things that I just wanted to briefly go over as far as the city ordinance. There wasn't a lot for me to, as a matter of fact, there was absolutely nothing for me to criticize in this ordinance. There were a few things that I might have liked to add to maybe close some gaps that may have been something that weren't considered, maybe it's something that I've had experience with. The edible protocol was one of them. The verification process also, in your ordinance it indicates that the recommendations have to be issued by licensed physicians pursuant to the Business and Professions Code. That's all fine and dandy, but most people don't verify the doctors to determine whether or not they're still actively licensed. We do. It's a protocol you should put into your ordinance that you need to maintain a check and balance on the doctors to make sure, number one, that they're not deceased, number two, that their license isn't suspended, and number three, that they haven't been revoked, because that inactivates every recommendation issued by that doctor. The other thing is you need some more protocols on your delivery services. You should set up what's called a sensitive use protocol on your delivery services, and there should be a reason for delivery. You don't want people just to deliver it to everybody in the city because it's going to be very difficult in that type of a situation to verify patients. It'd be even more difficult to prevent diversion of non-medical sources. So I would suggest that you at least set up a protocol for your delivery services, your edibles, and your doctor verifications. It's something I'd like to work with Mr. Schultz over the next month or so and try to get as much information as we can, but he did a really good job. If you look at most of the ordinances around the state, they're about a paragraph on a piece of paper. What he did is he took the best of everything I've ever seen and put it in the city of Morro Bay's ordinance. The last thing I'd like to do, and no offense to Chief Olivas over here, is that I'd like to take the annual inspection out of the hands of the public safety and put it in the public health. This is a medicine, and even though there may be some laws that are broken, it should be inspected by people who understand the medical aspect of it, and then if there is a violation of any kind of public safety, they can call on the police and ask their consultation or whatever. But every single medical marijuana dispensary should be open to inspection from the city where it exists. And I appreciate your time. I noticed the little lights blinking, and I appreciate it. Did you have any questions?
We don't.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Anybody else? Hi, Roger. Glad you came down.
Thank you. Good evening. My name is Roger Ewing. I'm a Morro Bay resident. And I came down because I was watching this meeting live on telly, and everybody seemed to be from out of town. And I'm here to remind you that it was the citizens that made this discussion possible. I and a majority of the citizens voted for the initiative that asked that Morro Bay have a medical marijuana dispensary. We've been having this same discussion ever since Proposition 215. And throughout that, Morro Bay has always demonstrated their commitment to compassion and caring for their fellow citizens. It's very easy to regulate the implementation of this ordinance to the point where it takes forever the benefits to be received. And that's what worries me, and that's what also got me off the sofa, is to urge you, abide by the will of the people. Give us the opportunity to enjoy a quality of life that drugs, pharmaceuticals don't give because of their high toxic chemical intake and the enormous side effects through pharmaceutical drugs. When we last had a dispensary here, I would be willing to bet half the citizens didn't know we had it, and three-fourths had no idea where it was, because it was handled with care, with respect, and abiding by the law, until, of course, it took a different direction, and that was a mistake, very disappointing mistake. But you have an opportunity to do it right, and I applaud staff for this ordinance. Abide by it, but more than just abide, make it happen. Sooner than a year, sooner than 2 years. Don't let it squander in the obligatory snake pit of bureaucracy, because nothing benefits from that. So I urge you, listen to the people. We voted, we've spoken, and we need what you have an opportunity to give us tonight. So please do it soon. Thank you for listening, and have a good meeting.
Thanks for getting off your couch and coming down, Roger. We appreciate it. Anybody else? Hi.
Good evening. Mike Mudgett, Fresno. I'd just like to say I agree with the doctor, and I think that I would like to make a motion, if possible, to make it a priority for the city. And I'd just like to add, you know, he mentioned that a lot of people are from out of town. This is true, and that's because, you know, we have experience with it, and we can bring the experience to the city. And that's all. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for coming over. Anyone else? Anybody? No. That's the magic word to get somebody else up.
My name's Pete Guerra from Grover Beach. Speaking about driving out here, I drove out here from Boston to get safe access to the medical cannabis. Morro Bay has been on the forefront nationally. I ask you guys to please allow people to have safe access to medicine that is not addictive. The only alternative right now for pain is opiates. You should know, officer. You should know all about
if you did address
what
that,
happens us, what happens to society under opiates. You sit under George Washington. He was a farmer of hemp. And I'm just imploring you to do the right thing. You know, the people of California spoke. The people of 15 other states have spoken in reference to medical cannabis. You're at the forefront. Do it, please. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for driving up. Anyone else? Here's the magic word. Anybody? I didn't have to say it. Hi.
Good evening, Mayor and member of the council. I'm Wanda Durek of Morro Bay. I wanted to share a personal experience with you. When the last dispensary was in business, my husband and I were downtown, probably at one of the farmers markets, and we parked on Pacific, just around the corner from Monterey, and we were walking back to our car. As we passed the dispensary walking toward Pacific, we were almost run over by a young man, a very slim young man who was running excitedly past us. And he turned a corner on Pacific, and there was a car that was parked right at the corner of Pacific and Monterey. And he raced there, and he said to his, I guess, friend, who was sitting at the driver's seat, he said, "We scored, we scored." And by then, of course, we were around the corner too, and they kind of high-five each other. And by the time we got into the car, they were off to celebrate, I suppose. And unless you are blind and deaf, you know, they came from the dispensary, and they obviously had not gotten it for their serious illness or cancer. At least I didn't look like it. As I listened to the people who spoke this evening, there were 10 so far, and 8 of them were out of town. 2 were from Morro Bay, and that's Roger and Bill. Roger was for it, and Bill was neutral. So there you have it. Everyone who's for it were from out of town, either in business or advocating it, and there was one young lady who was a user. Everybody else have an interest in it other than medicinal purposes. Thank you.
Thanks, Wanda. Well, here comes another local. Hi.
Hello, my name is Taylor Newton, and I'm from Morro Bay. The other day, my daughter, well, I have 2 daughters that aren't biologically my daughters, but I call them my daughters. And I have 1 biological daughter, and they're all Morro Bay residents as well. We were in Spencer's Market, and my middle one saw a tabloid and said, look at that girl, it was Kim Kardashian, and she said, she's so cool. And I said to her, why is she cool, honey? And she didn't know why she was cool. She was cool because everybody said she was cool. And we had about a 20-minute discussion about why she said she was cool. And my point to her was that she shouldn't say anything or think anything without coming to that realization on her own. And my point is that in my 33 years here on Earth, certain issues like racism and women's rights and the rights of homosexuals and the rights of people to use plants seem like heated issues that get muddled by media and money and people that want to come into a town like ours and open up a business and may or may not care about what happens to us. But when it comes down to, for me and my daughters, is what's right and what's wrong. And I know it's wrong that people have to hide in the closet. And I know it's wrong that my children have to be talked to about drugs from an open-minded point of view to educate them against people's ideas that may or may not be founded on real truth. And this isn't an easy issue. And I don't think there is an absolute correct answer where we stand right now. But for it to hide in the closet for any longer is ridiculous. And for me, I don't know if they're having a dispensary in town is possible or is doable or what we should do. But I do know that I want my children to be able to discuss it. And if they choose to use a plant that comes from nature and isn't changed by man, like most of our pharmaceutical drugs are, I think they should have the right to do that. And I don't want them to be afraid to educate themselves and come to those conclusions on their own. And so for me, the most important thing is for us to discuss it. And that's what we're doing. So good job.
Thank you, Taylor. Come on up. I can tell that you're a guy who came out of his living room to come down here. Am I right?
You're right.
Yep. Okay.
I'm very upset with this whole thing.
Please state your name.
My name is Jim Pauley, and I live here in Morro Bay.
Welcome.
And you try and be so politically correct, a lot of you. And I don't know where you're coming from, but I tell you what, as a Morro Bay citizen, I don't like it. Why don't you give this up? This is terrible. We don't need you setting up marijuana stands around town. What do you want to expose our kids to? Aren't they exposed to enough these days? We know what marijuana does. You talk to any hardcore dope person that's on dope, how'd they start? Well, they just a little marijuana. People that need marijuana can get it through pharmacies. Their doctor can help them out. There's ways that they can get it. You notice a lot of these people are not from here. This is Morro Bay. Why are you letting other people from outside here come in and give us all this jazz about how wonderful it is and how utopia this world's going to be when Morro Bay has a dispensary. I'm very disappointed in you and the council that have been for this. And I tell you what, I'm very disappointed in the staff and in the council. And I sure hope you just stop this. You could have quit this so long ago. But, you know, oh, you look into the laws and you do this and keep massaging it. What do you want to do? You think you're going to get a couple of bucks out of this for the city or whatever? Why? I just don't understand you.
We appreciate your passion, and we appreciate you coming out of your house to come down here and give us your message. We truly do. Anybody else?
Good evening. My name is Kurt Ashman. I currently live in San Clemente, California. I grew up here in Morro Bay. I'm 48 years old. I've spent most of my life here in Morro Bay. I've probably gone to school with some of your kids, probably not you, but some of your children.
Maybe George.
I've come all, yes, actually, with his kids. But my father owned a business here for 25 years. Most of my life has been spent here. I've recently moved down to San Clemente. I just think you guys are very forward-thinking. His application process is extremely thorough. I mean, as a business person having several different businesses, you know, you guys have done a really good job. I mean, I applaud you for that. Except for the edible, not having an edible clause in there or addressing that, which is a big part of the business, I think the application process as it stands, asking for a business plan, a security plan, all of that, you know, who's going to maintain it, you know, asking for background checks. I think it's very thorough. And it's extremely thorough. I think it's a template that many other cities could probably use. Sorry, they're going to have to piggyback your attorney's time, but I really do think it's a forward thinking. I think it'd be great if you could pass it even tonight, just as it stands. I do have a vested interest in Morro Bay. This is where I grew up. This is where my family is. This is where my parents are buried. So I think Morro Bay is a great city. I think you're very, very advanced in what you're doing, and your attorney did a great job on it.
Thank you. Thanks for coming out. Anyone else? Anybody? Going once? Oh. It's my new trick now. I say going once. Hi, Michael.
It's your bait. Good evening, Mayor and Council. My name is Michael Durek. I'm a resident of Morro Bay. What I'm going to say is probably not going to surprise any of you, but I'd just like to put a few facts out on the table. I'd like to correct my good friend Roger Ewing in his statement that the voters of Morro Bay voted in favor of a marijuana dispensary. That, in fact, did not happen. The voters of Morro Bay, properly or improperly led by the information that was disseminated, voted against a ban. A vote against a ban is not a vote in favor of a marijuana dispensary. So that's the first thing I think should be clarified. Secondly, I want to add emphasis to what Wanda Durek said about the number of people that are speaking tonight, how many are from Morro Bay and how many are not from Morro Bay. You're in office as our leaders to protect the interests of the citizens of Morro Bay. That is your first responsibility. And when you took that office, you stood before us, you raised your hand, and you pledged to uphold the Constitution of the United States of America. You are dealing with an ordinance that would allow the distribution of a Schedule I illegal narcotic under federal law. Now, I have all the empathy in the world for people who have medicinal needs for this sort of product, and I have no problem if that is distributed through a prescription from a medical doctor and sold across the counter at a legitimate pharmacy. I have no problem at all with that. What I have a problem with, and what is a problem throughout our state, in city after city, county after county, and all you have to do is read the LA Times, read the Chronicle, read the Bee, any of the Bees, you know what I'm talking about. You talk to your peers on other councils and other boards of supervisors, And they've got their hands full. They've got problems. There are murders that have happened because of dispensaries in Hollywood, in Los Angeles. Okay, Orange County is fraught with problems over dispensaries. Santa Barbara, which was mentioned tonight, has had their problems. In fact, one of the council people said, we don't know how to put the genie back in the bottle. You're intelligent people. Please be not only intelligent, but be wise. Show us your wisdom. Stop this while you can. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael. Anyone else? Anybody? Going once? It works. Hi.
Hi, my name is Eli Campos, and I'm a resident here of Morro Bay. I just wanted to mention a couple things that I'm hearing here as a common factor from several people is seems to be a fear of abuse in the community, bringing this into the community. People are afraid it's going to be abused by people who don't need it and don't require access to this. A statement on that and this being a gateway drug towards other things, I think, has been mislabeled for a long time. We all realize that tobacco and alcohol and misinformation are probably the biggest gateway drugs and problems leading up to this. Misinformation of people in the community on the uses and benefits of it and restricting access to it. So I just want to say without making any decisions on moving forward with this, we should always make sure that the fears are well justified and that and people are not just acting off of what they believe from some things that they've heard in the past. For instance, Reefer Madness was made years ago, and we know that that is full of lies, and many of those lies are still out here today being spoken about by people, and I heard many of those things here today. So let's just make sure we educate ourselves as much as possible. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for standing up. Anybody else? I'll try this again. Going once. Going twice. Back to council. Thank you all for your input. That's quite a cross-section of opinions and emotions and passion, and we appreciate it. Before I start here, I wonder if Rob has the answer for Mr. Smuckler.
Oh, I don't know if I have the answer.
Well,
I have an answer. I would estimate, you know, I said about a year. I think we could probably get something in to Coastal Commission probably within 5 months, given 3 months prep time to get it to Planning Commission, a month after that to get it back to Council, and a month after that to get it to Coastal Commission. I estimated probably about 80 hours worth of our planning staff work. And that would range between about $5,000 and $8,000 total. So that's about using 10% of their time to work on a revision to the zoning code to accommodate this land use change.
And would any time be taken from Mr. Schultz or Ms. Luker?
They would probably need to review.
Or the police chief? You know, it seems to me, I don't want to argue your answer, but that there's a lot of people that would get involved in this.
From the standpoint of the primary issue for planning staff would be that map issue. From the zoning code ordinance, basically, you would be taking the ordinance you already have and renumbering it in Chapter 17. And the big issue that's going to be decided is the zoning map and where it would be allowed, as I understand it. The other provisions would stay the same, but there are still time, regardless if you go that way or even if you stay in Chapter 5, where there'll still be additional time necessary for me to address the edibles issue, to address the quality issue that I still have not addressed, and a few other. When I read this, I just read it again and found a couple other items that are inconsistent and need to be straightened out. Whether that's 20 or 40 hours, it just depends on where it goes.
20 or 40 hours. You certainly got kudos tonight. Noah, thank you, and I didn't mean to step on you. I know how these things work. Noah.
Thank you. I would like a follow-up question to Mr. Schultz regarding the potential for a tax initiative, how you see that going forward just for the conversation tonight, and wondering the timing on that as you see the dates ahead of us.
Yeah. The earliest you can put a tax measure on is as a general election. So that would be 2000 and 2012. June of 2012 is when your next election would be. So that would be the time frame. We could either look at the June or the November election to put a measure on if, in fact, we move forward with that.
George, questions? Questions, Nancy?
Oops, excuse me. I had a follow-up question for Rob. Mr. Morris was talking about the city of Anaheim. Do you have any more information on that?
Sure. I don't believe it was Mr. Morris that made that comment, but the Anaheim case did not rule that cities do not have the ability to ban medical marijuana dispensaries. It did have a significant ruling in that it ruled that Proposition 215 is not preempted by federal law, and so that issue was decided, and it remanded it back. But the issue of whether cities can ban medical marijuana dispensaries was not ruled in that case.
Carla, any questions? Follow-up question?
Thank you. If you would elaborate a little bit more on the Anaheim ruling. And when we started this process, the concern was that the city would essentially be left exposed if we didn't have some sort of management ordinance beyond a ban in anticipation of bans not being legal or being faced to a lot of legal scrutiny. At this point, what do you see legally would be the outcome of the Anaheim ordinance, if any? And my assumption is that we really do need some sort of regulation management ordinance just to cover ourselves so we have that in our pocket for use now or in the future, and that's one of the main reasons we've been proceeding through this. Do you still see that as the case?
Well, there's a number of issues that occur. One of them is that, yes, I think at some point in time you're going to have a ruling on whether cities can or cannot ban medical marijuana dispensaries. Certainly if federal law and state law were in sync with each other, then I would believe that the cities could not fully ban medical marijuana dispensaries. And I say that because rulings have been that you cannot ban other businesses that can have secondary effects, such as adult businesses can't be banned. And I think that would apply. Those same arguments could be applied to medical marijuana if the two laws came in to sync with each other, which could happen. And the other issue I think that we talked about and discussed with the need to have an ordinance is that, I mean, it was on the ballot in November to legalize marijuana in California. That certainly, I think, is gaining storm to do again in 2012 to have another initiative on. So that's the other thing. If, in fact, it was legalized even for other purposes in medical marijuana, then possibly the city wouldn't have the ability, cities to ban it, but only regulate it. And that's my primary reason pushing it, is that we're prepared for that inevitable. If it does happen, that cities are prevented from banning it, that we're ready or already have it enacted.
Something else that I've heard as a concern is, as we've seen with an initiative process, the city, to a certain degree, we lose control. And if there was another secondary initiative process that was converse to the last, which was trying to ban a dispensary, but one that was actually legislating, that we would have to open one or at least create the ordinance to allow it. Do you see that as a potential risk if we basically pull this off the table and do not develop a regulation ordinance?
It's always a possibility. I mean, despite the accolades about the ordinance, it's all ordinance still need tweaks. You can't predict the future and taking it from other ones and doing that. And so if the city council enacts an ordinance and a year down the line we find little things that just aren't working, they can be tweaked and changed to make them work, whereas if they're passed by the vote of the people, they can't be changed unless you go back to the vote of the people. And that's a concern also.
Anything else? Any questions? Question for you, Noah, and kind of for you, Nancy, because we've talked about this. Can I ask where you're going on the zoning?
You know, at this point, I'd like to wait on and hear the rest of the comments. I share many of the concerns that I think a majority of the public have regarding placement, particularly. That seems to be the number one issue. And at this point, I still have some discomfort in proceeding within the zoning code. It seems like we were looking at that as a way to get something on the table as quickly as possible in anticipation of larger pressure from state action and so on. And I find myself thinking we really need to be careful as we move forward. And if that requires taking some more time and a little more investment to develop a better plan and really make sure we pinpoint the most appropriate location choices for this as options, then I could go there. I was really more interested tonight in the rest of the council's comments because I realize from our last meeting there wasn't, there was really, we didn't have a majority of interest in proceeding potentially, and so I thought I'd wait until I hear those comments before I make my final decision.
Okay. Do you want to add anything to that, the zoning angle?
Sure. You know that I've talked about zoning with Mr. Schultz. Just basically, if I had my choice, I'd say right now let's forget it and not even proceed. But the people in Morro Bay voted to allow them. They voted not to ban them, but they didn't vote to have them just any place. They wanted them. So I think the only thing I can look at right now is using the zoning regulations to make sure that we get the best possible option, the most protection for our citizens if in fact we do this. And I know it's going to take time, and I don't mind putting that time into it because I think it's important enough that we need to get it right the first time.
Rob, we've talked a little about this. Is there any way to control the location under the existing zoning rules?
Yes, let me step back maybe just for the public's benefit. Is the ordinance that you're looking at tonight is in Chapter 5, which is regulation of businesses. I prepared the ordinance in Chapter 5 in that it provided us the quickest mechanism to do that because it didn't require zoning changes or map changes, which has a CEQA process and more timelines, and it also means we don't have to go to Coastal Commission. So that was all good positives. And the negative of that is that we are very hamstrung on where we say we're going to put these. The only way I was able to do that is if we used the definition of drugs in our zoning code and design drugs also to include medical marijuana. And so by doing that, it allows it to be in the C1, C2, MCR, and GO zone districts. And that's where council is having a little bit of problem is that too many zoned districts in some of those locations include Main Street and Morro Bay Boulevard, which are high-profile areas, or even in the MCR, which is on Main Street and North Main. So that's the issue that's been framed. Your question is can we predetermine where they are? And, yes, you could through the selection process. For example, if five applications were filed and three of them were in North Morro Bay that met this regulations but were near – the near the elementary school, but two were more in the downtown location not on the main streets, I think the selection committee certainly would give that high weight to the locations that are not in the high-profile areas. At least that's the direction I saw council heading, and the selection would take those into consideration and could put them in that area. The downside of that is if you got all five applications that wanted to put them all on Main Street in North Morro Bay, you're going to have to go through the selection period and pick two in a high-profile area because they're allowed under your zoning. Did that answer it?
Yep, I guess it did. We could we could legislate how that would be scored.
what do you think the odds are we would get 100% of the applications in for Morro Bay Boulevard and Main Street?
I don't think you would. I think from the applicants, some of them have been at these meetings and they've been to the meetings for the selection committee and they've heard, not to go there in those high profile areas. But, also they're limited as to, a property owner that's going to allow them to lease and other considerations have to go into that. So, I'd be surprised if we got all five that were in an area we couldn't select.
Well, how would we keep if this was a and I'm going to go first here so everybody's going to know where I'm coming from. I am not in favor of having a medical marijuana dispensary in the main corner of downtown. That just doesn't make sense to me. And I wouldn't want that shoved down our throat. And am I hearing between the lines, Rob, that it could potentially be shoved down our throat? That's a concern. Okay, I'm going to go first. Is that okay? Everyone, any more questions? I don't think that my comments are going to surprise anybody. I have always been a man of the process. I'm a vote of the people guy, and the people voted not to ban them, and I cannot vote up here to ban them. I just can't do that. I think the argument that the initiative didn't tell us that we had to allow them is absolutely valid. But if suppose the initiative had gone the other way, and the voters had told us to ban them, and we were sitting up here talking about allowing them to open, well, you'd be up here going, hey, wait a minute, we voted to ban them. And then I would say back to you, it didn't say we had to ban them. So I think we're kind of, in the semantic thing. The spirit of the initiative was to not ban them. I hope we can all kind of agree with that. And being a vote of the people guy, the whole campaign last year, I never took a position for or against them. And I said consistently all along, I will stand behind the people. Had my fellow citizens voted to ban them, I would be up here. Exact opposite of what I'm saying. I stand behind my citizens and I stand behind their vote, and I cannot vote for it. But in light of the initiative, I am going to, regardless of my fellow councilmen vote up here, I'm voting for this ordinance. I am concerned about the location. I remind everybody I raised five children in this town. I would have been uncomfortable had my kids walked by a marijuana store every week. That wouldn't have settled well with me. I do believe that this kind of business will be found no matter how tucked away and remote it is. The last one was, as Roger Ewing pointed out, I think most of us didn't even know where it was. I think that was kind of a model business myself. They stayed out of trouble. They stayed below the radar. Police chief and I talked about it earlier. There was five in their 11-month life. There was five calls there. Four of them were for alarms. One was marijuana related. I think if we look at the liquor stores and the bars and the Albertsons got busted for selling cigarettes. It's hard to single out this one business. So I'm going to remain consistent on this. This is the same speech I've made before. When we get down to the vote, I'm going to vote for this ordinance. And I'll pass it on, George.
Well, Bill, listen to you, but I am concerned. And you heard me the last time we had this meeting on this, so you know where I stand. So I tell you right now, I think I'm going to just try to cut through the chase here. I want to make a motion right now that we take a vote up here at the City Council to actually forbid any marijuana dispensaries to be placed in Morro Bay.
Wow. Well, let's see what happens. Is there a second? Carry on, George. No, dies for lack of second. No second. I'm not going to second it.
Not as proposed.
Well, I guess I'm, like I said, I'm a little green at this, so maybe I didn't put it properly or whatever. Maybe I should withdraw my motion and let somebody more experienced give a motion, because I think this is very important. I have a lot of children in this town, but I also have a lot of little grandchildren, and I am really concerned. This Memorial Bay, we've been here a long time, our family, and we've been getting along just fine without something like this, and I don't like what I hear from the negative side of this thing. And, you know, people voted on this thing, and I'm going to tell you right now, I got something like over 20 calls. How many of them do you think got after me because I took the stand I did? One. So, yes, I feel like I am supporting the town, the people of this town, and what they want. So I guess I just don't know how to make this motion, but...
How are you going to vote on this, George? That's a joke.
How am I going to vote?
That's a joke. Who wants to go next? Go ahead, Carla.
And I would just say to Councilmember League, I didn't second the motion, and it's not because I'm not supportive of your viewpoint. Obviously, I've made that pretty clear. You know, in reading through all this, you know, I come back to one sentence that says, under the current federal law, however, the use, sale, possession of marijuana, whether medically prescribed or not, is still unlawful and carries significant criminal penalties. Period. You know, you can call it what you want. You can, you know, do whatever you want to, you know, try and call it to make it sound good, but it's still illegal and still conflicts with state and federal laws. 99% of the speakers here, and most of these have been non-residents that are looking to open businesses in our community for the benefit of themselves and the profit.
Non-profit, sorry.
You had your turn. Okay. And I didn't say a word. Now it's mine. So we're not Anaheim. We're not San Francisco. I don't want to be Anaheim or San Francisco, so I'm not interested in being compared to what the laws are there. And I've stated all along that I'm not supportive of this, and I'm going to continue to take that stance.
Noah, Nancy, who wants to grab it? Noah.
Yeah, I'll just make my comments as well. From Nancy's comments, it's pretty obvious, and Mr. Schultz's comments regarding our control abilities, which I think are very important, and everyone's counting on us to maintain control. And I submit that that's is the problem that you see in Los Angeles and Santa Barbara and around the state, where municipalities have opened the box, let the genie out, and they've done it in a way that's proliferated and spread dispensaries throughout their communities, and now they're trying to manage it back. And we are in a very different position here in that we obviously have not allowed many dispensaries, and we can carefully craft an ordinance that works for us and allows for safe access, which I think is the goal here. So the zoning amendment really appears to be our best option. It seems like it's the most thoughtful and gives us the most control, which is very important, and would in the long term be the most effective. And that's really, I think, the important thing here is working off of Mr. Schultz and the subcommittee's ordinance that's been developed, fine-tune that over the course of the process, and pursue the zoning amendments. Really, that to me is our best option. I have always had concern about the impacts of the black market and what happens and is happening currently with this being underground, and many people bring up the delivery service as an option for people now, and I'm very uncomfortable with that because it seems like that's almost as uncontrolled as the underground market, and my interest is trying to bring some light into this, allow our city to have a safe access point, and give us the ability to make sure that it is safe and it has quality control measures and even local sourcing elements to it. So that's what I'm going to support, and I think as we go through that process, or if we go through that process, we can really pinpoint the most appropriate locations, and that's going to be the key to all of this.
Yes, I'm going to basically say again what I said before. If I had my choice, I would say no. Let us ban marijuana dispensaries in Morro Bay. The people voted not to ban them, so like our mayor, I have to do the best I can with the situation we have. I agree with Councilman Smuckler that right now our best choice is to take the time and look at a new zoning regulation so we can decide where these can safely be. And just between you and me and the rest of the world, my hope is that by the time we get the zoning regulation done, we'll know more about this and maybe it'll be legal. But that's not my choice. So, yes, I'm stalling it. And that's all I can do right now. But in addition to that, the number of people here who were not residents of Morro Bay still bothers me. I didn't see very many people from Morro Bay standing up and saying, yes, we want a dispensary or two in our town. I think Mr. Schultz has done an outstanding job on the regulations that he's put together and the whole lot of work, and I don't think it'll go away. And please don't add green cafes. I cannot imagine going down the road of having edible marijuana available. I don't care how good it is for you. There's no way I would vote for that. So just keep it out of the ordinance, please. It's not there now, and I don't think it needs to be. Back to Carla's statement about the federal law. Contrary to what some of you may believe, we operate under a federal law. The state is part of the United States, and we stood up here and swore that we would follow the rules of United States. So I think I'm with Noah on this one. Our best bet right now is just, if we have to move with this, to do as much as we can about tightening up the zoning regulations and figuring out where it can go most safely. Hopefully someplace else.
We're just kicking the can, like they say, down the road again. People are using that a lot, but, you know, we're going to put a lot of work on all these people here. And that's why I think I would like to take a vote on this right away, because why sit here and hash this over when we haven't even made up our mind? I mean, like I said, I've talked to a lot of people, and where was the people that voted that they wanted a marijuana dispensaries in this town?
They were at the polls last November.
They were at the polls last November. That's the ones that we just clarified that they were not voting for. They want marijuana in this town or dispensaries. Now, where were they? Like I said, over 20 people I talked to on the phone. 20 people I had conversation with, and only one thought I was wrong.
Well, it comes.
All you did is going to just cause more work here for these people, and it just doesn't make sense to me at all.
I have to agree with
all
George
these zoning things. And, you know, I don't care where you zone this thing is, or put it. They're going to find out where it is anyway. Why do we want problems brought to our town?
I said this last time. I mean, I'm with George on this. It's like, don't stall. And especially don't suggest this to, well, okay, I'm stalling. Maybe it'll become legal, or maybe something will change, or maybe, you know.
Well, it might.
Yeah, but, if, you know, put all of us out of our misery. If this council majority doesn't want it, let's vote it that way and be done with it, and you won't hear from me anymore on it, because it's the process. This is the process here, and majority rules. And don't stall it. Don't stall it. You know, do it. Make a decision. Yeah. If you don't want it, vote that way. If you want it, vote for the.
That's why we're here, to make a decision.
We can fix it, you know, as we go.
I'm not willing to take that risk. I think we have to have a very tightly controlled and managed process with this, because it is such a sensitive issue. And I disagree that this would be taking action to do a zoning amendment is a stall. I think that's actually ensuring that we're doing everything possible to protect the residents and make sure this is going to be responsibly placed and managed. And another year of time, really, it looks like whatever direction we go, we're going to need that amount of time to vet all the issues within this anyway. So I do not see it as a stall. I see it as just an affirmation that we want to make sure this is the safest implementation of this. And
go ahead. Well, you may see it as a stall. She's already stated it's a stall.
Well, I think
well,
her, her,
was alluding to was that in that time, there's likely going to be changes with the state and the federal level. And if you read the writing on the wall, it looks very much like it's going in the direction of some sort of legalization, as it already has taken some of those steps. And in that scenario, we better have some concrete and very solid management policies in place. Otherwise, we're exposing ourselves to more risk. And that is the most concerning thing, is that we lose the control that we currently have. And I very much believe that we have the control right now, and it's important for us to recognize that and move forward very thoughtfully with the plan.
The only hole that I see in the control is the location angle, which is exactly what you're talking about.
That's what we're talking but about. Where are you going to put it?
I know where you're coming from.
I know, nevertheless.
Well, I don't know what to do here because I want to vote for the ordinance, and I don't want to stall it because I know a year from now we've gone through all this process, we've burned up these scores of hours, we get back here, all right, Coastal Commission has approved it, and it's going to be something else, and it's going to be another year. And, you know, that's why I say, you know, put us out of our misery now. Just listen. If you don't want it, say so, and kill it. Really. I mean, I said this the last time. This is a never-ending loop.
As I already said, I don't want it, but I will not go against the vote of the people, whether the vote was right, wrong, or indifferent. I think our best choice is to control it as much as we possibly can. Is it good choice? No. Is it stalling? Maybe so. But, and if it comes back in a year or 6 months, and at least we have a regulation as to very specifically where they can go and how they can operate. And at that point, if it's specific, if it's totally protected, the people are totally protected, I will have to vote to allow it. But not tonight.
You're clear. Who wants to make a motion? I do not.
Not
me.
Unless
I'm forced.
Well, okay, I'll try a very simple motion tries not to complicate this sensitive issue. So I would move that we direct staff to initiate a process of amendment to the zoning code that will give a better management policy for the location of a potential medicinal marijuana dispensary.
Second.
Discussion. I'll go first. I'm not going to vote for this for the reasons I just stated. This is just a stall. We'll get a year down the road. It's going to be something else. And so I'm going to vote no. Carla? George?
I'm ready for a vote.
Nancy?
I'm ready to vote. You know where I stand.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. George?
I said no.
Did you say no? Motion fails. 3-2. All right, I'll vote that I'll make a motion that we approve the draft. I'm sorry. I'll make a motion that we approve the proposed ordinance. Do I hear a second? Of course not. Okay, Carla.
And bring it back for first reading.
I'm not going to get a second. Do you want me to amend it? All right, and bring it back for a first reading. Do I have a second? Carl, I'm going to give it a shot.
Again, I'm going to say that this is not a stall. If in a sensitive issue and complex as this, you need time. And that's exactly what we're doing. We're making sure we're taking the precautions.
You're beating a horse. You've already made the motion. We've had a vote on it. We've voted down. It didn't work. So you can't, you know.
Yeah, but you keep on bringing this stall word into it. And it is
that's
not
my
a
view.
Stall.
That's my view.
Yeah, I needed to express mine again.
Okay. It's not. Say again? There's no second. So if I make a motion, I don't have to vote affirmatively on a motion that I make, do I? All right, I'll move that we stop further consideration of any medical marijuana dispensary in Morro Bay.
Second.
We're getting there. Discussion?
Yes. In that scenario, and this is for Mr. Schultz, we essentially are taking this draft that we have, putting it in the cupboard or something like that, until we then need to scramble to find it when we need it?
Yes, I mean, with that, staff would not work on it any further until a council member brought it up as a further, you know, a future agenda item, and there was consensus to bring it back, and then we'd bring it back. But we wouldn't work on it any further with subcommittee or with drafts or any amendments.
This would end it, right? For now.
For now. I mean, certainly if in 6 months a council wanted to bring it back,
not going to be me. Carla, did you have a comment? Nancy? Comments here? All in favor say aye. We got to say aye. Or
aye.
Soft aye. Opposed? No. Did you vote aye?
No.
This is.
No.
You can't not vote.
Then I'll vote no. Not to.
No. To table it.
That's a yes.
That's a yes.
What was the motion? May
Boy,
I
isn't
the
this,
motion again?
And this is really lovely, isn't it?
Do you want to ban medical marijuana dispensaries?
That's not the motion.
No, it wasn't.
You
I
know
was
what
asking
I want to do.
All right, repeat the motion, please.
Yes, please.
The motion that I have is Mary Yates moved to stop further consideration of marijuana dispensaries in Morro Bay. The motion was seconded by Councilmember Borchert.
Let's take the vote again. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? No. Motion carries 3-2. Okay, please. I know you're happy. And I need a break after that. That was a tough one, wasn't it? Okay, we'll take a 10-minute break.
Okay, now, get your zoning right.
All right. Did you guys sign up for your bike month challenge?
What is that? What are you talking about?
Yes?
What is it?
No, you don't have to do that ride. No.
I'd probably kill myself on a bike.
No, around town.
I'd probably still kill myself. I'd fall off.
Look at this.
Do I really have to?
D1, Ms. Luker. Hello, Craig.
Item D1 is enforcement of regulations prohibiting A-frame signs, and I will turn that over to Mayor Yates for the presentation.
Okay, Carla, thank you for that. Carla and I have worked on this together. The A-frame sign, is this okay, Carla, if I take the lead here? The A-frame signs have been talked about forever and ever. They have become a nuisance, a clutter, a visual blight in the community. We are trying to clean up town. I won't go through all the things we're doing. Everybody knows it. This would be just another piece of that puzzle. We are proposing that we prohibit all A-frame signs in town and encourage people to move to pub signs. Let's put the pub signs back up, please. And we have an example of A-frame signs on the other side. Let's show the A-frame signs first for the TV. And we actually have pages of photographs, but this is just one page. If anybody doesn't know what we're talking about, A-frame signs. It is the sandwich board signs that sit on the sidewalk. Somebody spoke earlier with numbers. Tracy Neal, I believe. I don't remember what the numbers were, but big numbers on the waterfront. There's big numbers downtown. They're all over town. Cities that don't have them, Arroyo Grande doesn't have them. It's a clean town there. They have banners on the poles, and they have great landscaping, and they have no A-frame signs, and they have pub signs. And it's a beautiful little town. And I'm not saying we want to be Arroyo Grande, but we want to clean up town. And the only way to do that is to get these off of the sidewalk.
We do see this as a business-friendly move. I know that there are businesses who think that we're trying to, that this will hurt them. We have the alternative with the pub sign. Go ahead and turn it over, Steve. And you see examples of pub signs. We have some great ones in town. These are signs that hang out over the sidewalk, off the sidewalk, up in the air. Visibility is better for people like Lost Isle, who really depends on his signs. We were down there speaking with him yesterday and suggested a pole right there with a sign overhanging, and he said, yeah, I mean, that would solve it. That Beach Bistro, I think that would solve their problem even better. So the people at North Morrow who are worried about visibility, these are even more visible. So that's our proposal in a nutshell. You want to add to that, Carla?
Just real briefly in the nutshell. You know, you experienced with the Royal Grande, along with other areas that we've recognized, Monterey, Carmel, solving. I was just down there. And for what I see, it's a visitor-friendly move in allowing people to socialize and congregate, move freely on the sidewalks by not having that. You notice the difference of when you can walk 2 and 3 across down a sidewalk versus having to dodge the signs. And so I know in Atascadero, when they tried to do an ordinance with a lot of restrictions, they're having problems now, as it's just no one's there enforcing it. People are chaining signs. I with the 40-some signs I counted down there and all these pictures, you know, some of the A-frame signs are even to the extent where they're chained and padlocked to city property, which to me is really not an appropriate use of them. So I look forward to hearing the rest of council and hope that we can get support to move towards a change.
So we, Carla and I, are open to questions on this, and we also want to hear your comments. Who would like to begin?
I'll begin. I'm definitely supportive of a change because I agree with you. I think the some areas of our town have really been impacted by a proliferation of the A-frame signage, and it's although it works and is important for some specific businesses, as a whole, it really does congest our shopping districts, and we need to make sure that we're thinking about the perspective of the shopper and guests to those districts. And at this point, I've seen too many people on our sidewalks come in to a place where there is a sign, and immediately they close, they look down, they're trying to negotiate to get around the sign or other people that might be coming, and it becomes a scene where they're not really experiencing Morro Bay. They're thinking about a discomfortable situation. So I agree, and I like that we can move forward with something. I just find myself concerned that we're trying to apply a rule that's definite and starting essentially, as I understand it, tomorrow. And there are very different 30 days. Excuse me. There are very different regions and districts within our area, and I think the points that have been brought up for businesses that are either in new locations that are off beaten track, such as Verges, or in North Main Street, we really need to be sensitive to those needs. And if we just implement this now, I'm not sure we're doing that. Plus, in North Main, I think particularly we need to come up with some more flexible options for them, because the pedestrian traffic is much lighter, and of course they're potential customer is usually driving by at least 35 miles an hour, if not faster, from the highway. So my thought would be, let's move forward with this, but let's do it in a more phased manner and get some more input from the business community. And I would suggest that the chamber would be a chamber and our staff could facilitate a pretty good conversation that would give us a phased plan that recognizes differences between the districts.
Okay, I guess I would like to make a comment first. The chamber has been, since this is being, you know, I called Craig, I gave him a heads up the moment it entered our consciousness. And I've talked to him every few days. I've asked for feedback. The chamber has sent out an email. The Merchants Association has sent out an email. We heard back from people tonight. So I'm not saying there's been committee meetings or subcommittee meetings or anything like that, but everybody's been informed, and really it hasn't been very controversial. As recent as yesterday, I asked Craig to his face, "What have you heard?" And he said, "Nothing." So it hasn't been the North Morrow people I started hearing from today, and then they were here tonight. I would still maintain that their visibility would be better on a pole with an overhanging sign. But I'm willing to, my mind is open to that, but I would like to hear a suggestion from you. I heard concerns, but not a suggestion. Do you have a suggestion?
Well,
are you okay with, like, doing away with them on the waterfront and in downtown and Quintana, and suggesting we let North Morrow go for the moment? I mean,
I think at a minimum we need to exclude North Morrow. And overall, I would like to have a little more conversation outside of the council meeting with our staff and with the chamber. I think that there's more input there. And we've heard consistently from businesses when this idea has come up at a council meeting with those concerns. So as far as the Embarcadero goes, are we still making giving a way for a business like Lost Isles off the main stretch and on the waterfront to effectively get their information out there? I'm not sure. I don't know how quickly they're going to be able to implement this pub signage, which I do like the concept of, and make sure that they're still getting their name and business out there to the public that might not see them. And that's my concern, is if we just throw the big blanket over all this, we're going to lose some really important details in that big cover, and we're not going to be able to address those. So I guess my suggestion would be, at a minimum, let's make sure that we are not implementing something that creates a space of time where a business that really depends on some sort of exposure, that they won't be able to implement the new plan, and then that excludes North Main until we can deal with that in a little more concise manner.
Okay. Just a reminder, the A-frame signs are illegal. What we're talking about doing is enforcing the existing code. It's, you know, I know we've looked the other way all these years, but
yeah,
that's what we're faced with here. George, I see you on your button. Go.
Well, I got a lot of faith in the business people of Morro Bay. I tell you what, they'll figure out how to get people into their places of business. I begin to think that maybe sometimes these one sign went up, so the next guy says, "Well, I got to have a sign in front of my place too," and it just kind of they become crutch for people. And we all know it just got ridiculous. And just like they set out the Beach Bistro, that people are going by 55 miles an hour. Well, I don't know. I think overhang sign, they could be seen just as much as that A-frame. And actually now you're talking about saying, well, maybe North Morro Bay should be exclusive. You're going to run into a lot of problems on that one, because these signs are illegal in North Morro Bay, in Embarcadero, Morro Bay Boulevard, Main Street. And so you're going to say, okay, North Morro Bay can have signs. Well, pretty soon up here, I look over here at real estate people on Morro Bay Boulevard, they're going to say, what do you mean? Why should we be exclusive? You know, that they should be having signs out there and when we can't. I just do not agree with that we're going to have to just spot around where we're going to put these signs. And then how about the policing of this? Who's going to go out there and do this? You, sir? No, he says no. So anyway,
you can do that. Andrea, okay.
Andrea, okay. But, I mean, it's just another problem we're going to create. People run around and say, oh, that's right. He has a right to have a sign there. Oh, not him. You can't do that. You can't do that. And you watch. You know, I don't know how long we're going to take to have these people remove these signs, but mine is going to be gone. I think it's gone tonight, or yesterday or something, but it will not be out there anymore. I will volunteer to take mine down, and I hope a lot of business people volunteer to do this, and it'll make it a lot easier on us. They completely got out of hand with these things. Most of the business people realize it, and let's clean up our town. That's what we're doing. Let's make this town more friendly. We got a problem down in the Embarcadero with the narrow sidewalks as it is. I mean, you stand there and just two people talking. Bill and I were down there talking, and we were constantly dodging people to go around us. I mean, to get out of their way. So, I don't know. Let's clean it up. And like I said, these are illegal signs anyway. It's not like we're making a new ordinance here.
Nancy.
Okay. At the very least, I'm firmly in favor of getting them off the Embarcadero. They're a hazard to people walking. They're a mess. First, though, I have a few questions. I, too, have concerns about North Morro Bay. But first, can we enforce, we know it's a regulation, can we enforce it in one part of town and not in the other? Does it have to be all or nothing?
No, you can't. It has to be all or nothing.
Okay.
You can't. Okay. You certainly could do that through an amendment to your zoning ordinance, but your current zoning ordinance prohibits them.
Anywhere.
Anywhere. We allowed them through a sign exception, but that's been stopped. So currently all the signs are illegal, and you couldn't selectively enforce. You certainly could, through the sign amendment, designate certain areas that would allow A-frames and not, but you can't tell staff to enforce part of the code on part of the public and not on the other part.
Okay, so that, it's either all or nothing. Either they all go or that none of them go, which brings my next question. Aren't we getting the new sign ordinance soon?
The sign ordinance has been to Planning Commission. They reviewed it. It does include provisions to allow A-frame signs in it, as is currently proposed. So we'd need to carefully look at those. We modeled them after Atascadero's provisions, but as of recent, they're having problems with enforcement of that code section, and it's not working out very well there. So we may want to reconsider that code section. We took public testimony that wanted to increase the size of the projecting or pub signs, and we added that to the ordinance. But basically, it's as approved by council many years ago, and with the exception of the increase of the pub or projecting sign.
Okay. If I could follow up with what you just said with another question, especially in terms of what Mr. Smuckler just said. When we look at the new sign ordinance, are we going to be looking at different regulations, perhaps, for different parts of town? I know they have different needs.
That wasn't the direction that we were given in the past. It was to basically take the sign ordinance as was approved by council, add provisions for A-frame signs to tighter allow them, but with regulation, and we heard at our Planning Commission to increase the size of the allowable size of the projecting or pub sign.
Okay, somewhere I remember talking about three specific different areas in town: North Morro Bay, Quintana, and then downtown in the Embarcadero, as it having different signage needs. So that's something we can look at later when we start talking about how we're going to do the ordinance, right?
Yes. I mean, when it comes back to you, I think, and it's ready as soon as it's, the agenda is done and there's allowable time for it, that's something that you could direct staff to do, is look at different zones to allow different types of signs.
Okay, so I guess the bottom line here is that the elimination or the enforcement of the ban on sandwich signs is basically a temporary situation until we have a chance to look at the total ordinance and then, in fact, put a new ordinance into effect. How long are we talking about in terms of actually having a new ordinance?
Well, we can have it back to City Council in fairly short order within the next you know, few weeks. But this is one of those code sections that is under the purview of the Coastal Commission. And we would need to submit this to the Coastal Commission for their review and input also.
It's very simple.
And approval, not input.
Okay, so we're talking 6 months to a year.
You're right.
Yes.
It could be implemented sooner than that, possibly, because it doesn't, in fact, involve a permit for a business or development. And so the sign it ordinance, once approved by you, it might be something, if that's what we're looking at, is getting that regulation going as soon as possible. It might be something that we can discuss and maybe implement earlier.
Okay. So for these businesses that are going to have to go, well, let's use the Lost Isle Cruise, for example, because he's way off the beaten path there, and he'd need to put up a pole and one of these pub signs. What are we talking about in terms of expense for a business person? Does anybody have a guesstimate as to what a pub sign costs?
You know, I think it would depend on the size, the type, and how fancy it is. The galley with their fish is pretty fancy. Then right up there at the boatyard, you've got block letters that says kayak rentals, which would be very low cost compared to this or some of the hand-carved ones. So I don't know that it really... It's like, how much does a car cost? Well, you know, you're talking about an Acura or a Bentley. I don't know that it's answerable.
In some ways, that could almost get us back in the same situation if we're going to say, all right, take your sign down within the next 30 days and put up a pub sign, but we're not going to tell you how big or how well done it has to be. You know, you could get out your magic marker or whatever.
No, yeah, we don't, and we don't want to be in the, I would not want us to be in the sign design review board business.
Somebody to be either. Thank you very much.
Kind of somebody suggested that tonight about size and lettering and graphics and, you know, so the size will be controlled by what is being proposed. So that's covered. If we agree we're not going to dictate design, I mean, it does have to be in good taste, right? I mean, you can't have a nudie girl or something. I mean,
why not? If it's the lingerie store, why not?
Well, the lingerie store would be okay. You know, if we make an exception there, then, you know, other than that, make a sign. Lost Isles is going to certainly be a different design. They're going to have a parrot. They're going to have a clock. They're probably going to take half of it off at night. It's going to be a totally different type of thing. But the idea is he still has visibility. He still stays in business. You've got the same visibility, but the junk is off the sidewalk.
You're right, and I want the junk off the sidewalk. I guess I'm just kind of playing devil's advocate because I want to see what's going to happen to people here, to businesses. Speaking of Lost Isles, I mean, he's got the parrot sitting on the city fence. Are we going to let him leave it there, or does he have to hang that from his sign? See, it gets a little complicated.
Well, you know, it gets a little complicated if you want to, you know, get it that close under the microscope. Are we going to go after his parrot? You know, I don't. I'm not going to go after his parrot.
She is.
Well, she's, you know, she's the hard one here.
She's the enforcer, right? Okay.
Aren't we just trying to get these A-frame signs off? Isn't that what we're supposed to be talking about?
I don't think we should be focusing on one business like that.
No, okay, no, we should not. I apologize. But there is one other, and I will not mention the name of the business, and this is a business that's just moved, and they have their A-frame out on Beach Street so that people will know where they are because nobody knows where they are. But right next to it is the world's ugliest A-frame, and I'm not going to tell you who that is either, but...
But isn't that a subjective thing? No,
yes, that is, and I can't be subjective, so I guess
Mike probably
that means
thinks that's
they
one
all
of the,
go.
A beautiful sign. Well, they either all go or they not, or they don't. If you make an exception for Verges and As High As I Am, then you
I didn't say that word.
Well, I'm saying it because we all know what you're talking about. they're having fun back there. Come on out, AGP, and join you.
I'm sorry. I'm just trying to, I don't know, figure this thing out.
You know, George, I think, hit the nail on the head that businesses are going to figure this out. and they're going to scramble, and they're going to get it done. And I'm a proponent of the 30 days, so that's kind of the Memorial Day. That's the big kickoff for everything, and we're all sweating it out whether we're going to make it or not. But that's it. Enforcement is a problem. I assume we would send out letters to everybody. We would want to keep it friendly. I did get a call today from somebody who's scared that the cops are going to come down. You know, it's got to be friendly and
it has
you
to
know,
be
work
enforced.
With people, but it has to be enforced.
How are we going to enforce this? I mean, how about if they let's say somebody just says, I'm not taking my sign down.
You go get it, George.
Yeah.
I would have to say before when there was a code enforcement officer or back when we actually had permits for our A-frame signs when Sandy Ford was here, if you had yours out and it was illegal, they came and confiscated it and you had to go get it back. They picked it up. They just picked it up and threw it in there. I took it down to Public Works, and you had to go get it back.
Do we have the manpower now to do this? I see a shaking of a head over there. We had a code enforcement guy then.
The police had a code enforcement guy.
I'm hoping that business people see this is not right and just say, you know what, let's cooperate and all work together.
That's the idea.
That's the whole thing. Is if we can get the people in businesses to just do the right thing here, you might be surprised. You might see these signs come down real fast.
Can I? Just chime in real quick.
You've got the floor.
Thank you. You know, I think that desperate times bring desperate measures, and when business is tough, we do anything and everything we think we can to try and bring people into our business. And that means putting sandwich board signs out. And when one doesn't work, we put two out. And when two doesn't work, we put another. And we put it down a block in front of somebody else's business because we don't have as good a location necessarily. And it just, you know, as it's been expressed, it proliferates to a point.
Banners on buildings that have become signs, in effect, illegal signs. And so,
are those currently illegal?
Yes. The ones that are existing are illegal. Rob and I have gone over the code today, and there's a 30-day exception for things like grand opening. You can put a banner on grand opening.
But you can't leave under new business out for 3 years.
Correct.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, why can't we just add those to this as long as we're gross.
We can in the motion. I'd like to see them off the street ends,
too.
Especially. We're going after the newspaper racks. Get those out. Now we've got banners. And in one case, we have a boat that's stuck up in the air, which is a sign. A kayak. You know, we want these street ends open so we can look out to the water. I think that would be enhancing the town.
When you remove them, everybody's on the same playing field.
Yeah.
And I think this became somebody trying to have an advantage because somebody else had their sign out. If everybody's up, we're all on the same playing field. And I think we all recognize needing to support the businesses at the north end of Main Street, but I would have to say, you know, based on their comments that somebody's driving by at 55 miles an hour on the highway or 35 miles an hour on whatever the speed limit is, you can't read the A-frame sign. You certainly can't out on the highway. You see the business's sign and hopefully what type of business it is, but I agree that I think a pub-type sign or something would be more visual for somebody going down the road than an A-frame on the sidewalk. So I don't see that. You know, again, I come back to where we're just all challenged trying to stay in business, so we try anything.
And I think that leads me back to my only real concern. Having owned a business that at times was, shall we say, financially strapped, if the city or somebody came along to me and said, all right, you have to take this sign down, okay, fine, but you can go get a permit and put up a new sign, a pub sign, where is some of these businesses going to get the money to put up the new sign? And I know I'm getting into minutia, but I just had to say that. It worries me.
It could be a problem for some. I think people will work it out, just like George said.
I hope they can.
You know, if you have no money, you can go get a 4x4 and a shovel and put it in the ground with some sacrete and make a sign and hang it out there. I mean,
and you're going to volunteer to provide small business loans and shovel work.
Absolutely, that will be part of that.
I would venture to guess that the Chamber of Commerce we have here will be supportive of this and help those businesses. And part of what we looked at in clearing up those sandwich board signs and things was a possibility of complexes, and I'll just use Marina Square for an example, of putting out what they referred to as MASH signs or stuff. Craig Schmidt brought some information where the leaseholder of that property would help his businesses and saying, here, you know, we'll put each one of the businesses that we have in here on this corner, and these are this way, or these are upstairs where Bill's business used to be, and people will find it. You don't have to have, you know, 10 of these out there somewhere. You can have one nice sign that represents your complex with your businesses in it, and hopefully some of those will look towards that as a reasonably affordable way to do it.
Which brings me to my last question, and that's, where are we with those MASH signs? Will that be in as a recommendation in our new sign ordinance, or will we need to do that ourselves?
I don't know that they're not allowed already. I believe that a sign like that is allowed. It would just need to be approved as part of the sign program for the master lease.
Okay, great.
And you know,
Thank you. Some
businesses already have them. I mean, there's Marina Square, Boatyard.
Yeah.
Two that come to mind. Maybe Marina Square, Boatyard. Maybe that's the only two, but those two come to mind.
Maybe more of them will be encouraged to do that. Are you ready for a motion?
Yes.
I move to approve D1.
Second. Discussion?
I'd like to amend it.
Well, let's hear it.
To add banners?
Well, I thought of that, and I think that it's not part of the deal, but we can ask Rob. That can be done administratively, like the newspaper racks. But Rob needs to, he has an overpowering.
I don't mind that being in there. It was more, the only amendment I was looking at is, what time frame do you want in that?
What's a 30-day?
Second. And as far as the banners go, we can go ahead administratively and handle that, right?
Yes.
And we probably could have administratively handled this as well, but I think this was big enough to have.
And this will be with a letter that'll be done.
The letter will start tomorrow before noon. Those will be in the mail, right?
Oh, sure.
Well, I think just talking to some of these people about these banners,
please,
probably,
George, if we could just do this in turn, it would be so much better.
Well, yeah. That's a great idea. I never thought about that.
Are you finished, Nancy?
I am so finished.
And he said, you know, I see where you're coming from in this. He's got a sign over the gangway. He's got signs down in his dock, somewhere on the roofs of his little buildings there. He's got visibility. I had a store down there for 13 years, and our whole sign was this big. That's all we were allowed by the city. We never had an A-frame. We never put anything on the awning. People found us. You know, these businesses that have street front businesses and they have an A-frame sign right in front of their business, it's like the story I told about Monterey about the palm reader. I mean, there it is, palm reader. We have a palm reader, and then they've got an A-frame sign this close to their front door. We thrived down there with that one sign. We had big windows. People could look in the store. I realize that was an advantage over somebody who's behind. But look at Carla, yeah. So anyway, businesses do not survive or fail on A-frame signs or banners. That's my contention. Noah.
Thank you. Mr. Livick, do you anticipate any problems with permits for the new signage as far as how that would move through the department?
As long as it's complying signs, I don't see any problem with a sign permit. Is over the counter. It's not a long process to get a sign permit. As long as they're complying with the code, that was the whole problem with the exception permit for these A-frame signs, is because they were exception, they had to go to Planning Commission.
Okay. And then, I think the issue maybe you're getting at is the pub signs. Well, I want to make
that
sure
that just drives me nuts, Rob. You know it does. Yeah. Well, no, we do want to hear it, but it's just Rob knows. My thing with staff and with you guys, I just did it to you, is interrupting, just butting in like that. Rob's insulted now, and I'm sorry I did that, Rob. But you know how I am on this. Please say what you needed to say. Please. Please. It is to us.
The issue is, under our current sign ordinance, the issue is the pub signs are restricted. The new ordinance will allow that, a bigger sign, further projection. So if someone came in tomorrow, they're going to be restricted on their pub sign, and staff's going to be hamstrung until those changes are made through our ordinances to allow for a bigger pub sign, more projection. And that's the issue that I was trying to get out before, is I believe as soon as that ordinance is passed, we might be able to implement that before it gets coastal approval. That's okay. That's really, I think, the one issue we have, and I just want to point that out.
Thank you, Rob.
And that's just to increase, that was just to increase it from 24 inches, or is that what it is, 2 foot to 12? Oh, okay, it was to increase it, and that's what planning had said. Okay.
Anything else, Noah?
Well, just to sum up my comments, I see this, we are in a city that's all trying to work together, and we have a larger commercial interest that we're all a part of, but we do have very distinct business districts, and my concern remains that North Main is a much different animal, and that this action is going to impact them in a negative way, particularly because we don't have these nuances that would allow them to have a larger pub sign, for instance, to attract the attention that they need to be able to pull people off the highway. And it's an important district to us, and it seems like we're forever taking action that undermines it rather than supports it. So I'm not going to be able to support this move.
And my understanding, excuse me.
Go ahead.
Based on Mr. Leibig, I'm sorry.
That's all right.
Is that this is going to be coming to us in the next few meetings anyway, the whole sign ordinance. We're addressing this. So we'll have that in front of us in a manner that's going to somewhat coincide with the timeline on this.
So, and that's why I'm wondering, why not just phase this out a little more softly and create a better plan instead of, I felt Ms. Johnson had a really good point in that it appears that this exemption to the sign ordinance to allow these A-frame signs, whenever that was made, has obviously created a big problem, and it seems like it was probably made in haste and thinking, oh, we're just going to take the simple direct route, and what has that ended up with? Well, here we are, and we're trying to wrestle with it, and we're going to, I think, take a similar type of an action, which is, well, let's just take care of it. And I think it requires a little more thought, and this is getting to an important ultimate outcome, but it's doing it in a way that I think is going to be very uncomfortable for some of the businesses in our districts.
Any further discussion? Are you ready to vote? Yeah. Everybody ready to vote?
Not to be. Question that started in 2008, the city took action on two occasions aimed at supporting businesses and preventing vacancies on the Embarcadero lease sites. I do think pretty much everybody on the council at this time is familiar with both of these resolutions. Resolution 4709, the main thing that it did was to waive penalties and interest on past due rent, allow for quarterly payments of semi-annual rent, allow for support of office-type uses on second floor of businesses, which previously was not considered allowable uses on the Embarcadero, and we waived the contractually outlined consumer price adjustments for that fiscal year, which was a 3.5% reduction in lease revenues. These actions were unique to fiscal year 2009-2010 and were not continued. In April 2010, the City Council passed Resolution 2110, and that authorized a credit for lease sites that filled vacant spaces or spaces that became vacant with new businesses. The rent credit would be $3,000 per business up to a maximum of $6,000 per lease site. To date, only one tenant has taken advantage of this option. Just as an overall background, lease site revenue has definitely been declining since fiscal year 2008-2009. by foregoing the 3.5 CPI adjustment in 2009-2010. There was a loss of approximately $25,000 in minimum rent. Percentage of gross sales rent declined 24% from 07-08 to 08-09. Minimum rent was relatively flat in 2009-2010. And it was up only slightly 0.25%, or about $3,000. Percentage of gross sales rent was down over 8% again from 2008-2009 to 2009-2010. We won't know about percentage gross rent for this fiscal year because it's not due until August. Based on anecdotal evidence and just from talking to leaseholders, looking at some of the sales tax revenues, it does appear that tourism is increasing in Morro Bay. Business is generally getting better, but this is mainly seen in hotel and restaurant sales. Retail sector is still struggling quite a bit, and I would anticipate at least another 2 years of pretty flat percentage of gross sales rent. In this aspect, the percentage of gross sales rent, the city is truly in partnership with the lease sites. If the lease sites do not do well, the city or the city's harbor fund does not do well. And I just gave an example of the way the percent gross rent is calculated because I think there's a lot of misunderstanding about that. Just a brief example is if a tenant has a minimum annual rent of $30,000 and their gross sales for the fiscal year is $600,000 and their percentage of gross sales is 5%, the amount of gross sales rent would be $30,000. But the rent is structured so that the tenant only pays what they haven't already paid in minimum rent. So since they've already paid their $30,000, they would not owe any additional rent to the city. And if the rent, if their revenue went up to $700,000, then the amount of gross sales rent would be $35,000. But again, the $30,000 they already paid for that year would be subtracted, and they would pay the additional $5,000. So I just wanted to clarify that. I know that new businesses on the Embarcadero are always confused about this, and I know oftentimes council members as well are confused as to how that's worked out, because oftentimes in commercial leases, it is a minimum rent plus percent gross sales. So I wanted to clarify that. The City Council also authorized staff to continue allowing quarterly payments of the minimum rent for this fiscal year. And we have several tenants that are taking advantage of that option. Another option to consider for possibly the next two fiscal years would be to allow monthly payments of the minimum rent. This would not impact the minimum rent overall revenues to the Harbor Fund, but would allow cash flow, ease of cash flow, especially during winter months for the lease site tenants. Most of the subtenants, I think 100% of them, do pay their rent on a monthly basis, not in advance. The Harbor Fund is an enterprise fund, can only spend what we receive in revenues, and with revenues declining, we have not been able to add much to our accumulation fund, which leaves fewer funds available for anything outside normal operating or planned capital projects. We would hope
of the month-to-month, recognizing that that may offer some assistance to the leaseholders. My concerns with it would be about delinquency, and so therefore where we waived penalties before based on quarterly payments that were a larger sum, if we're going to do this to support and alleviate, you know, support the tenants, the leaseholders, and alleviate that quarterly or semi-annually payment, I would want some strong enforcement on due dates with penalties. You know, we did it before to try and help them on the 3 month and 6 month, but I would be concerned that somebody would get behind on a month to month. So I would want all the rents due, regardless of what their current status was, so that anybody doing month to month would all be due on the first. I think that would be very difficult for them to track it throughout the whole month if everybody didn't pay consistently at one time. And I would certainly, you know, be looking at a penalty for past due and you know, anything past 10 or 15 days to me then would be a, you know, would be some action taken.
Don't you already have that in place, Susan?
Yes, pretty much all the leases do have penalty clauses. The rent, right now, rents are due semi-annually the 1st of July and the 1st of January, and the rent becomes technically late on day 10, and 10% penalties apply in, I would say, 98% of our leases. If we did bring a motion or a resolution to council suggesting we go to monthly, we would certainly include language that would clarify that the monthly rent would be due the 1st of the month, would then become late on the 10th, and penalties, as in the lease agreements, would still apply on a monthly basis.
10%?
Yes.
Okay. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, except that I would probably want at some point that, you know, that they would default if they kept down that path. I wouldn't want to get to the next month and have them not be current. So I guess I would be looking at some point where they would default then on their lease if they were not paying, the same as they do on the quarterly or semi-annual. Mm-hmm. But I'm guessing that language would all be included on this month-to-month, the same as the others.
The language already does exist in the leases now, that if they do not fulfill their rental obligations to the city, they are considered in default.
Are you good?
Thank you. Yep.
Nancy?
I'm fine with Sue's explanation. That makes good sense.
George?
Well, I'm really fine with this because I'm knowing how the struggles that the businesses has been through in the last few years, and in the way it used to fall on, like January 1st or February 1st, boy, that's a real nice time to have a great big hunk of money fall on you in Morro Bay. So I think this monthly thing is going to be just super. So I think everybody's going to, and I think you'll find that they'll be able to keep up with this better.
Noah?
I agree with the comments from Ms. Borchardt.
Great. Who wants to make the motion? You want me to do it? Direct the harbor manager to bring back a resolution approving allowing rental payments to be paid to the city monthly. Can we do this in perpetuity, or does this two-year thing have to stand? Can we just make this forever? Okay, I'll just...
It's up to council.
To make the rental payments monthly with a 10% penalty after 10 days late, and with provisions for default. Now, here's a second.
Second.
Discussion. Discussion. Everybody ready to vote? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries 5-0. Thank you, Susan. Yeah, George voted no. D3, Ms. Luker.
Item D3 is a discussion of bike racks with dedication plaques program, and I'll hand that over to our Public Services Director, Rob Leivick.
This should be a very quick item for you to consider.
Great.
I'll make it very brief. It fits right in with Bike Month coming up in May. So I'm basically stole this from the city of San Luis. Talked to Peggy Mandeville over there, and she said it was fine. But it's modeled after their Racks with Plaques program. They use a local vendor to provide racks in their downtown, and they facilitate the installation with some guidelines. The program can provide for needed short-term bicycle parking, and as proposed, the donor would pay for the rack, the plaque, installation, and maintenance of the rack. The donation would be subject to the existing city donation policy.
You good, George?
The only question I got is these bike racks are about $12.50 or $16, whatever they are here. And you got maintenance on these things. Is the maintenance built into the price? How do they maintain these things?
The city of San Luis added an additional $200 to basically the price of the rack to account for pulling it back up and having it repowder coated. If need be.
How many times does this have to be done?
They're thinking maybe once every 10 years. But it's powder coated, over galvanized steel. It should be a fairly quality product. It's the company's Peak Racks out of San Luis Obispo. A gentleman named by the name of Rod Holtley owns that company.
One more question. How about if something happens to this rack, like maybe an automobile runs into it and destroys it? Or do we got insurance for things like that? Or?
Well, hopefully the motorist that ran into it
has insurance.
Well,
we're talking hit and run here.
I think it'd be with like with any other city piece of infrastructure or bench that's donated. If somebody runs into a donated bench and flees the scene, we would need to ultimately replace that bench with city funds. I don't anticipate this as a hopefully it's not a regular occurrence. I don't see it happening very often in Morro Bay.
Well, we all hope that doesn't happen. But anyway, thank you very much. You cleared it.
Nancy?
I think it's a great idea. Just a couple of questions. I'm wondering if the $200 maintenance is enough along the coast with our salt air and wind and things here. It might require more than every 10 years, I would think, having dealt with powder coating in my own backyard.
I think using the galvanized product and powder coating over the top of it is kind of a standard that we've learned from those that are working on the waterfront. We have found that's a product that holds up fairly well.
Okay.
And I think it is a reasonable cost to pay for the additional maintenance on those items.
Okay, if you say so, then it is. The other thing, I'm guessing you'll decide where to put this Model 1 downtown, so we don't have to worry about that, right?
Right.
Thank you.
Actually, if you want to know the location that I would like to put it, I was approached several months ago by the owners of Coalesce Bookstore. They wanted to somehow get a bike rack near their store because they see people coming there, locking their bikes to the trees, to the planters, benches, places where they're not appropriate.
Great idea.
Thanks.
Thank you.
I'm a big fan of powder coating. I had parts of my boat powder coated, and they crossed the Pacific and looked brand new on the other side. I think what I would worry about would be, the bikes chafing. Yeah. But as far as weather, it's amazing.
All right.
Carla.
Thank you. I think it's great. It's a local business that does it. That's wonderful in San Luis. I'm really happy to hear that. And my question was asked by other people already, so the last one I have is, the future locations are approved through you? Is that how that's done? Because I noticed in the picture some of them are 4 and some of them are 8, which seems like...
Those are on the large size.
Yeah.
They also have 2 and 1 racks. So... I've noticed in San Luis they placed a 2-rack end-to-end, so it doesn't take up, we're all concerned about the sidewalk real estate. It doesn't take up a whole lot of sidewalk real estate, leaves the sidewalk open. Now, not all locations are going to be appropriate. I would not envision putting these racks down on the Embarcadero where we only have, 5 to 8 feet of sidewalk. These are for locations either somebody can volunteer to put it on their own private property, in like a common area, or very wide sidewalk are the appropriate locations for these. And public facilities. So are the library, city hall area, would other locations where these could be placed.
I guess they have to go through you to do this?
Correct.
They can't just randomly go choose a spot. It has to be approved.
It has to be approved.
Okay. Thank you.
Everybody good? Somebody want to make a motion?
How about
you, Noah?
I'll move that we direct staff to develop and implement the Racks with Plaques program as described.
Second.
I think Nancy beat it. We'll give it to George. I'm overruled by Nancy.
About the Navy Fuel Depot that was raised to public comment, do we want an informational report on that? Or are we satisfied with just pursuing it on our own?
He gave us an informational report on it.
I think he covered it very thoroughly.
But, yeah, that's what I meant as far as a contact again with the agency and finding out if there's any further details that would be involved that we should be aware of.
Do you really want 95 miles of pipeline under any circumstances?
Well, maybe no, but I would say maybe this is off the table. Maybe it's different.
Well, no, he's just asking if you want to look into it.
Yeah, we want to look into do we have an interest in the future of that property is kind of the question that I have.
Well, I think we should look into it.
Yeah, well, of course sure. We want the property. We just don't want the strings.
Or right. Or if we don't have the property, do we want to be aware of who may and what that might involve? So I guess if we keep this on the radar, that would satisfy me. And if we do follow up with a phone call and we make sure that we're not letting something happen that we're not aware of.
You're a councilman. I support you talking to Rob or Andrea and saying, hey, what are we going to do about this? And pick up the phone and, you know, get your question. You know, I'm satisfied with what Rob told us, but I certainly support you being a city councilman and doing city council work.
Absolutely, and then at the right point, we would bring this as a future agenda item if it was necessary. That's my question.
If you find
absolutely.
Anything new and
good.
Exciting,
okay,
please
I just wanted
bring it
to confirm
to
that.
And if it's something urgent, you know how to make that happen.
I
there
do.
You go. Okay.
All right.
And did I get this signed?
Yes, nothing? You did. We're
okay.
done.
How are we on these comments like this at the end? Are we okay doing this? This is kind of cool. I mean, what we... Declaration of future agenda items often turns into this kind of thing, which isn't really, but we're okay, right? I mean, it's cool. Anything else from this side? Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Rob. I thought you said...
I didn't talk about my idea about a tunnel teleporter to Lemoore, so it's not a problem.
Would you like to declare that for a future agenda item? You're working on that one. Okay, anything else over here? Anything else? Anything from staff? Did I interrupt you? I'm so sorry, Rob. Okay, we're adjourned. Thank you all.